The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Let me tell you about who deserves a shot at the United States Heavyweight.
Let's hear it.
I'm the champion. I ought to know. You know, I've been sizing up guys since I came to the WCW. And I think the one guy that stands out the most, the guy that I think has earned a title shot, El Dandy, I think you're a heck of a wrestler, you're a great technician in the ring, and you're a jam-up guy. Whoa. I don't see any reason...
Wait a minute. El Dandy has been wrestling in the cruiserweight division here. Please.
He's a great wrestler.
He's a great wrestler, but thank goodness sakes, it's 50 pounds
difference. Who are you to doubt El Dandy? Because this guy's a serious professional.
Well, let's talk about some serious contenders.
How about hypnosis? Let's get thrown...
Psychosis? Psychosis?
Whatever. He's a great wrestler, you know...
Your world goes dark as they put you in the ground. Their evils won't stop until they know your hate is bound.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleCast. Sitting in the big chair tonight, I'm your host, Don DeLorenzo. And I'm joined by my SmackDown correspondent, the lovely Miss Stevie Jeanette.
Hey, friend.
Of course, you can always find the WrestleCast on CSPN Network, www.cspn.us. You can also find us on our Tumblr page at thewrestlecast.tumblr.com. Now, tonight, we're joined by a very, very special guest. He is a writer and editor. His work has been featured on uprocks.com. And this week, he had a great article in The Undefeated on the Boss Bay herself, Sasha Banks. It's none other than Mr. David Dennis, Jr. How you doing tonight, David?
What's up, folks? How's it going? Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me and all that good stuff.
Oh, man, we're glad you could make it. We're glad you could make it now. You know, just getting into the article that came out right before Hell in a Cell, so the timing was perfect as Sasha and Charlotte were getting ready to. At the time, we didn't know if they were going to be the main event, but on Sunday, it played out just that way as they became the first women to ever wrestle in a cage match and also headline and main event at pay-per-view. So my first question to you, David, tonight is just how did that interview come about?
Well, I had pitched Sasha Banks to the folks at Undefeated a few times. Sasha Banks is, one of my favorite wrestlers. I've said in the piece that at the time of the NXT takeover, she was the best wrestler, in the world, and I stand by that. And so I had pitched that, but at the time when I had originally tried to do the article, they had that really weird, mysterious time off thing, and then they didn't know how long she'd be out. And so the WWE folks were pretty much like, well, we can't do anything for her. You can't talk to her, yada, yada, yada. And then sort of out of the blue, when she won the belt for the second time, they hit me up and said, hey, let's get this interview back on board. So we did it, was able to interview her and do a whole lot of writing.
Okay, now did this interview take place at like a live event? Or did you get to take in a whole show, or how did those mechanics work?
No, see, originally what I wanted to do, I had originally wanted to make a town with Sasha, like go to an event and then ride with her to the next town and part ways there. But because of the schedule and sort of the last minute nature, because originally we had always decided we wanted to do this leading up to Hell in a Cell because it was in her hometown. So that was sort of the deadline we had in mind, and we lucked out that she was main eventing. But so it happened, ended up being just a phone interview. I talked to her for about 30 minutes over the phone. She was in some bathroom stall. She said that a couple times. I don't know where exactly that was. But we talked on the phone for about 30 minutes. But I did want to go and travel around with her. But, hopefully I'll be able to do that with some wrestler at some point.
Okay. Now, my next question is there something that didn't make the interview that stood out about the conversation that you had with Sasha?
She told the Eddie Guerrero story, how she found out how he died. Which I'm not sure if everybody knows. I know some people have heard that story, but not everybody, which was interesting. And then we talked a good bit about, her brother and what it's like, having a little brother with special needs, things like that. My son has special needs, so it was interesting to connect with her on that. But, that sort of, those two things were sort of tangential to the story at hand, so they didn't really make the final cut.
Okay. Now, my final little bit is that since you're a first-time guest here on the WrestleCast, we have to get your origin story with professional wrestling. So just kind of, you know, when did you start liking it, loving it, and, you know, on up through the years, everybody has that period where they fall off and then they kind of get back into it again. So, you know, just tell us your origin story when it comes to wrestling.
I have been a wrestling fan since I was born, pretty much. My dad was a big wrestling fan. His grandfather used to take him to some barn in Shreveport, Louisiana, where they'd watch people wrestle. And my dad still recalls when he was like six and he looked backstage and like the bad guys and the good guys were shaking hands, and it ruined his childhood pretty much. But he watched it. He watched it all growing up. And, you know, when they used to come to New Orleans, like those territories that were their Junkyard Dog, when Flair would come to town, Freebirds and all that stuff. And so I was always into wrestling. Like, that was been forever for me. My dad is a huge Ric Flair fan. He would tell me Ric Flair survived a plane crash, so I should love him. So I've always been into wrestling. I would watch WCW Saturday night, and I think WCW Main Event on Sundays that came on, I think, before or after Captain Planet on TBS. I would watch that pretty religiously, and so I stuck through it all through the Monday Night War. I never really fell off. I think I fell off a little bit at the beginning of college, but I've been pretty much watching every episode of Raw and SmackDown, a little ROH here and there, and just, you know, knowing about what's going on in wrestling. I've done a lot of the writing for with Spandex about wrestling, and so it's helped pay some bills, so I'm not mad at it.
Oh, yeah, man. It's nothing like taking something that you love and turning it into a venture where you can actually, you know, make money from it.
Right.
Because it's not actually work then. It's actually fun.
Right. Exactly.
Well, Dennis, like I said before, we are so honored to have you here tonight, and you know, want to get your thoughts on our reviews for you know, the past week in wrestling. And but first, before we get into that, we're going to talk some news. As the court has denied the injunction, and Billy Corgan is completely on the outside looking in at TNA, as the Fight Network has taken over the daily operations of the company. So the best that Billy can hope for now is that these people feel some type of compassion for him and try to give him back some of his money that they have taken away from him. But doesn't look good as far as Billy Corgan, you know, being the owner and controller of TNA. Looks like Dixie is still going to still be some kind of way involved with the Fight Network, but it looks like they're going to put their guys in charge as far as vice presidents and things like that and take control. And so we'll see where TNA goes from here. It looks like they're still going to be alive in some shape, form, or fashion. So what do you think about TNA's 10th, 11th life, Damon? Do you think that, you know, can they actually get it right this time? Can they be really what everybody wants them to be?
No, I don't think so at all. This sort of feels like, you know, when you have a relationship and you have that big fight and you know it's over, but you're just kind of still together until you find a place to live. That's pretty much what's going on here. Because, I mean, TNA, Dixie has it, but I don't know how long it's going to be around. And I don't know. I don't have the slightest idea of what's going on at TNA. I don't know who the champion is. If I want TNA, I feel like now I just watch NXT because everybody from TNA is there. So, yeah, so I don't know exactly how long this is going to last. But, I mean, I guess congratulations to Dixie for having TNA for a couple more weeks.
Yeah.
I got to speak up on this here. I think TNA is, in this producer classic, I'm in the building. I think TNA, I don't know, for some reason, it feels like they're too big to fail or something. It's like you know, finding out somebody's like getting married again and they're on like their sixth or seventh marriage. And you're like, wait a minute. You went through all this and now you still found somebody to like put up with your shit? You know, how many lives has Dixie Carter had in TNA, or, you know, it has continued to get like new ownership? It's amazing. It's kind of like, you know, how cockroaches live past like nuclear winter or something. But I think Billy Corgan needs to, like, you know, get with Rihanna and do like a bitch better have my money sickle, because that's all he's going to be doing is chasing that 33% ownership stake and trying to get his money back.
Right. I heard that they've kind of been talking to him on the outside of things, trying to put together a little package where he might not get his whole 33, but at least he won't be left without 33, if you get my drift. So, you know, that's probably the biggest thing that's going to come out of this, is just kind of how they kind of make him go away, because I'm pretty sure they don't want to take whatever money that they do have and tie it up in court with him. So,
But we're like, what, at least 11, 12, 13 years into this, the existence of this company, and they're still going. You know, it's kind of amazing that they still keep finding life. You know, we're like, oh, TNA could shut down any minute now. I really believe we're going to be into year 20 of this talking about the same thing. Like, TNA could shut down any minute now. No, they're on, like, their 12th owner. That they somehow they still found some life. You know, they might get bought out by Trump or by, you know, by whatever new like company pops up or something. You know, the people that buy Vine, they're gonna buy TNA.
Yeah, but it just they don't have any. Their biggest problem is they don't have anything worth investing in. If you do decide to be like, okay, let's save them.
Yeah, you know. Well, this recent thing with the tape library was, you know, that and became some kind of like a bargaining ploy or bargaining chip, if you will, because, you know, the reports of the WWE being interested in everything, and that ties into a lot of the WWE talents that are now there. Like, oh, now I can watch all these AJ Styles and Sting matches, or I can watch all these things that technically, if you're part of the WWE universe, you don't even know happened, or you totally ignored it. But now it's like, right. Oh yeah, they did fight each other.
Yeah. So, like you said, it's going to be a very interesting next couple of months. Like, you know, something will definitely change again by the first of the year. So, we'll keep our eyes and ears open for that. Now, in our next bit of news, we're going to have a new show, a new hour of wrestling starting on November 29th at 10 p.m. on the WWE Network. And it's going to be called 205 Live. And what that's going to be is a brand new show dedicated to the Cruiserweights. And it's going to have a commentary team of Mauro Ranallo and Corey Graves. So, obviously, they listen to this podcast. They've heard me lament on Twitter several times that the Cruiserweights just need their own show. Now, I guess they're still going to try to spread them out within Raw and NXT as well, which they probably shouldn't do if they're going to give them this show that's all their own. But I'm with it. I'll definitely check it out. Hopefully, it won't just be like a bunch of recaps and then like one match. It'll actually be some fresh, you know, matches and fresh angles. But I'm excited for just the Cruiserweight show. I think it'll be a much better representation of what they can do and who they are than just the one or two segments they get on Raw. So I'm looking forward to that. Anybody with any comments on just, you know, how they've been, think the Cruiserweight division has been going? David, I'll open it up to you.
I think it's good that they're going to have the show because it gives them a little something, to give the wrestlers something to sink their teeth in, to kind of develop their characters, kind of develop the style. And then they can almost repackage it and bring it back to Raw in a few weeks or a few months after they sort of build a following. I mean, they could do basically build their own following like they did with NXT. Because right now, they just threw like 10 wrestlers on Raw who nobody knows anything about. And, you know, they're doing innovative stuff. But like what made the Cruiserweight division work on Nitro was that it was like so vastly different than what Hulk Hogan was doing, for instance, right? So you got Hulk Hogan and Piper in the main event. Like Mysterio and Guerrero are doing something you've never seen before. But that gap is sort of closed now because you look at TJ Perkins and Brian Kendrick, like they're not doing stuff that's vastly different from Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens, right? So they need to find an identity that kind of helps them stick out a little bit. And then also it's very weird that like Kalisto and Neville were never integrated into the Cruiserweight division. That's odd to me. So they need to get their identity, and I hope that this helps them kind of work things out for the next few months.
Yeah, that's a good point about Kalisto and Neville. That's kind of what they needed, was an established guy from the main roster that fit that criteria to jump in there and, you know, kickstart it off, to give them that somebody in that name value that the crowd already knew, where they didn't. And then, you know, let that person go around to everybody and introduce you to them as he, you know, feuds with them. So, yeah, you're right. Hopefully that will happen for Neville, since he is kind of just in a no-win situation right now. Him and Sami Zayn seem to be two guys who are on the outside looking in of having something by creative.
The Undertaker, I would like to see I wouldn't mind Jericho losing a few pounds and getting in the Cruiserweight division and being a major heel out there.
That's what I would want to know. It's like, this is called 205 Live. Are we going to follow these wrestlers around 24/7? And what if somebody like stops at Wendy's and has like a triple and jumps over 205? Are they kicked off the show?
Hey man, it's a shoot weight limit, man. So yeah, you gotta stay within your poundage. Now, if you're rich homie Swan and you weigh like 160, you're good.
Yeah, you're good. But you know, say you're trying to cut weight, do they follow that one wrestler around all week? You know, while they're spitting in a cup and, you know, trying to cut weight and to make the 205 so they can be on Raw the next week. That would be
pretty cool.
I'd watch that TV. not the spitting, but you know, kind of you could censor that, I guess.
Yeah, just the trial and tribulation of what it takes to cut weight. Yeah, that's a really rough thing as someone who did wrestle in middle school and high school. Yeah, cutting weight is not the best thing. It's good that I was a bigger fellow where I wrestled heavyweight, where I didn't have to worry about the weight limit so much. But yeah, for some of the smaller guys, I mean, yeah, that's kind of brutal seeing them have to do the things they have to do to lose a pound and a half in 2 days so they can make their weight. Now, somebody who will be making their return will be The Undertaker, as he will be returning to SmackDown Matters, Pass to the Tag, on November the 15th. So there's going to be an attraction there for everybody who loves The Undertaker. If you guys didn't get enough of him during the ring ceremony for the Cleveland Cavaliers, he's going to be back on SmackDown in 2 weeks.
Why didn't he at the World Series? He could have Charlie Sheen wasn't enough for the Indians. He could have helped them out over there too. I'm just saying.
And our last bit of news
is: can he actually walk? Is he walking on his own power? Like, what's going on? Is they're going to just put him on the floating ring thing like they did in WrestleMania 3, or what's going on?
He strolled out to the court in Cleveland. So, I mean, yeah, I guess so. I guess whatever surgery he supposedly had, some type of hip surgery, I guess, was minor, quote unquote. And, you know, not too limiting as far as him getting around, because, you know, we see a picture of him on crutches. And then, like, less than a week later, we see him in the Cavaliers locker room. So, you know, maybe he got some of that stuff Kobe got.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but, you know, I worry about him. I'm just worried about him. Like, every match is makes me nervous in, like, the bad and the worst way possible.
Yeah, hopefully he won't have to get physical. Hopefully he can just maybe, you know, be a presence and not really have to do anything.
He'll probably just choke slam some jabroni that comes down to, like, test him, and that's it.
Yeah, he's going to choke slam Luke Harper, and that's going to be the end of it.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big boy to just, you know, come out and as the we're going to have a light night for you, Taker.
Oh, it'll be like Curtis Axel. I think he's on SmackDown, right?
No, Kurt Hawkins.
Kurt Hawkins.
That's more like it. Yeah, Kurt Hawkins will probably run out.
Yeah, chokeslam Kurt Hawkins, yeah.
And get done up. The PWI, for Wrestling Insider, released their 500 list, 500 best wrestlers, and they set the internet on fire with number one being Roman Reigns earlier in the summer this year. Well, they're back again with their... they're back again with their 150 list for their women's wrestlers. And so I'll just give you the top 10. Starting at number 10 is Sienna. I have no idea who that is. Number 9, Sexy Star. Dee Dee, chime in.
What is a sexy star?
Right. Number 8, we have Gail Kim. And number 7, we have Natalia. And number 6, we have Jade. Number 5, Bayley. 4, Becky Lynch. 3, Asuka. 2, the Boss Bay, Sasha Banks. And number 1, Charlotte. So, Dee Dee, I'll let you go. I'll let you get in here. What do you think?
It's better than last year when, who was it, Nikki Bella?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So that's something?
Yeah, yeah. We'll give you some other notables. We have Eva Lise, at 11.
Mm-hmm.
We have your favorite Rosemary at 14.
That seems high.
Paige is 19.
That seems real high.
She's falling like a stone, though.
Nia Jax, 23.
Fair.
Our
might
favorite.
Even be generous.
Yeah, our favorite, Naomi, 25.
That's low. That's way too low.
Oh. Underrated. One spot ahead of the Enforcer in Training. Shout out to Jupiter Jula. Dana Brooke, who is 26.
That seems high.
Alexa Bliss at 29.
Wait, Dana Brooke is ahead of Alexa Bliss?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
Wow. And this was published this week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, probably over time, you know, they decided. Yeah, this was probably from weeks and months of research, and you know, they didn't have time to get to the editor and move Alexa Bliss up those notches that she obviously deserves.
Right. All right. Yeah. We got Emma at 33.
You mean Emelina?
Yes, well, Emelina.
When she gets repackaged, and she'll fall lower because she's going to be a diva instead of a wrestler.
I guess we'll see. We've got Ember Moon at 37. But she's definitely probably going to be rising very quickly next year.
Yes.
And we got Carmella at 44.
Fair.
And okay, rounding out the top 50, my girl, All Red Everything, Eva Marie.
Now, that was the troll drive of the century, but that's fine.
So there are 100 women wrestlers worse than Eva Marie.
Allegedly.
That's about right. Sounds about right.
Does it sound right?
Exactly right.
What happened to the former PWI top 50 women's wrestler, Cameron?
Well, Cameron retired, so she's no longer available for the listings.
You should
actually be playing taps. That's just actually a sad moment.
Yeah, we got the budget for taps.
So, yeah, so, you know, that would definitely be something that everybody can talk about and have some judgment over is the PWI 150 best female wrestlers.
Yeah, and Sienna, she's like Maria's current enforcer in TNA Impact.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So that's...
All right.
Yeah, that's her.
So now we're going to get into our reviews. We're going to start off with, of course, the big pay-per-view that happened this past Sunday in Boston, Hell in a Cell. As always, we start with our hashtag, Say No to Pre-Shows, as we had Cedric Alexander, Lince Dorado, and Sin Cara versus Drew Gulak, Tony Nese, and Daivari. Cedric Alexander hit everybody's favorite finisher move, the lumbar check, on Drew Gulak, and his team gets the win. This was probably the best match that the Cruiserweights have actually had since they've been on the show, part of the, you know, Raw on the main roster. I mean, this match was really good. All the stuff that you were talking about, David, about doing the cutting edge type of high-flying moves, it was definitely a part of this match. So I gave this match really high praise. I really liked it. They actually probably could have put it on the main show, and I think it would have got a good reaction. So, Didi, I know you didn't see it, so we won't ask any of your feedback.
This was a pre-show thing?
This was a pre-show thing.
No, I didn't see it.
Classic or David, any of you guys got any thoughts on it?
I cannot remember the last pre-show I saw. I believe Ryback was in the last pre-show that I saw.
Everybody makes mistakes. You're right on board with
Didi here.
Right. I caught the tail end of the match itself, and I think I caught the recap. You know, they replayed it during the pay per view. It's pretty cool. I like how Cedric Alexander got some shine. I love his finisher. You know, it's pretty devastating. The lumbar check. I just like the fact that they had a great team. And it was a great precursor to Raw the next night, where the Cruiserweights tagged up again in a six man, and had a similar match this time with who's my man? You can't handle it.
Rich Homie Swan
was on the team this time, so with Cedric Alexander. Funny thing about seeing Cedric Alexander, I kept thinking he and Rich Homie Swan are probably going to have a feud later down the line. But the only reason I thought that was SZA, which I can obviously admit I can't be having this black on black wrestler. Let's have them tag up together and really have some unity, and then maybe they can split up like the Primetime Players did eventually down the line.
They could be the new Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson.
They could. Or they could be the new Butch Reed and Ron Simmons. But then you got the masks on them and stuff, So we're not bringing back Doom. We're never bringing back Doom.
Yeah, we'll go more Soul Patrol than Doom.
Yeah.
All right, so cue the pyro, cue all the bells and whistles. Let's officially start Hell in a Cell. So it starts off with our first match, Rusev versus Roman Reigns, Hell in a Cell match for the U.S. title. Basically, this was a fight. This was like a 25-minute fight. Actually went longer than I thought they would. But Roman hits the spear off the steps after giving Rusev a Samoan drop on the steps. Roman pins Rusev, and he is still your U.S. champion. The crowd actually decided to cheer Roman in this match. They actually came and was on his side for once. So
I told you about them fans.
It finally worked out. It finally worked out. Rusev, I think, is just fantastic. He's a great performer. And him and Roman Reigns have much better fights and brawls than they have, quote-unquote, wrestling matches. So this really worked for me. Classic, did you pick this out?
Only negative I got from this was there was one spot where Rusev pulls out the Singapore the kendo stick from under the ring. Obviously, kendo practice is still a nice pastime of ring crews around the country. And he beats Roman in the chest with it, without taking off his Kevlar, and everyone's like, and Twitter was ablaze with people going, yeah, he can't feel that because he's got a vest on, you know, he's got a D-Lo chest protector, so I don't know why Roman is selling this thing, but this is sports entertainment, so you can overlook that. Arguably, you know, of this triple main event, probably the most satisfying for some people match of the night, but you know, that's depending on where you come from or your opinion. I really think it was pretty solid, and you know, I got to give credit to Rusev and to Roman for putting on a good match to start off, to kick off the show.
Yeah, yeah, same here. David, your thoughts on Roman Reigns and Rusev?
The match was good. It was frustrating. It was for a few reasons, mostly because there were so many convincing good finishes that had Rusev winning where Roman would not lose anything from.
Oh yeah, yeah, he was on Super Cena for sure.
He was on, yeah, he was on his Super Cena ish, and it was just crazy because there were so many, like, Rusev could have won that match and Roman wouldn't have. I mean, you got him with the chain on the steps when there is no real conceivable way to break out of that, and he did, and it was just like, just let Roman pass out, and Rusev gets the belt, or have him cheat, or so. There were just so many different things. There were about three or four things towards the end of that match where it was like, oh yeah, let's just, like, Rusev is going to win, and then Roman doesn't, and then he hits a spear, and then it's over, like that. So, in a vacuum, it was a really good match, but watching that ending was just like, this is getting kind of out of hand.
Right, which seems to be a theme of the Vince McMahon run shows, and especially the theme of this night. So we get a video recap of what happened on Raw at the end of Raw and the post-match beatdown by Owens and Jericho on Seth Rollins, followed by a backstage promo. Then we have our next match between Bayley and Dana Brooke. Bayley hits the Bayley to belly and gets the win over Dana. Really short match. I think it was about 8 minutes long. You know, 50-50 booking. Bayley's taking a couple of losses, so of course she got the win at the pay-per-view. Crowd was really silent, and they got to figure out what they're doing with Bayley real fast before they lose all what's great about her. So, Didi,
they
got to
get
fashion...
away from Dana.
From Dana. We'll do a fashion cast. Did you like Dana's new outfit?
No.
No?
I don't remember. Okay. I remember that it's different. I don't remember what it looked like.
Okay.
I did enjoy Bayley's colors. I enjoy how Bayley coordinates with the New Day. That makes me happy. They tend to share the same color family and outfits.
Hashtag fashion cast.
Mm-hmm.
David, any thoughts that you want to share about Bayley and Dana? Do you think that they need to get Bayley away from Dana, as DD said, to kind of give her a shine back?
Yeah, they need to get most people who wrestle away from Dana. And Bayley is top of that list. Apparently Charlotte won because they're trying to green light the Charlotte Bayley feud, so you know, this was not the best way to get people excited about that. But you know, it's over. We're moving on, and I'm glad we are done with this for the time being.
Right. Classic. Any thoughts?
No, I was getting snacks, but you know, I still enjoy you know, Dana's in
ring
style.
The women's revolution. That is not the time for the breaks anymore.
I couldn't do it during the pre-show. I didn't say no to pre-show, so I had to do it at some point. But you know, I did catch you know, some of the replays and recap at the end, and I mean, it was pretty sudden, belly to belly. I think, you know, making Bayley look strong makes sense. You know, you got to really push her along because she's kind of going to be your top. You know, one of your top faces in the women's division, like the only other face really on Raw. So it makes sense to do it. Yeah, I think keeping people away from Dana, I'm wondering what's next for Dana Brooke now? Is she going to, like, you know, feud with someone else on the Raw roster, or is she just going to be like a valet or something? Like, what's, you know, what I'm more concerned about, what's going to happen with her? Is she going to go back to the belt mental?
What they should do is, they kind of touched on it with the arm wrestling thing. But what she could be is, she could be the female Scott Steiner, and have her, and have that strong
big mama pump.
Yeah, be her thing, where she just goes around interfering in people's matches, ragdolling people.
Is she gonna? Should she have a random Master P lyric as her catchphrase as well?
She could maybe get a Beyonce lemonade reference or something, freshen it up a little bit. But yeah,
so
same thing, man.
Instead of a lead pipe, is she gonna carry something else that Arena brutalize her opponents with?
I don't know.
Maybe a foreign object, I mean, that, you know, was thrown onto the field in a football game recently.
We could flesh it out farther, but just the premise of it, I think, will work out well, just because that's kind of who she is in real life. You know, she's a workout fitness type person, so I don't think that would be a stretch for her to play that type of role. So
she needs a mouthpiece or a manager if she's going to go that route, and I think a certain host, co-host of the show, would be perfect to travel the road with her. Last name Del Rente, but that's just my opinion. I don't want to give you any work, any extra work, along with your other duties.
My other bays would be so disappointed if I did that, so I have to be careful.
Yeah, we'd miss you, though.
So we have Chris Jericho backstage with Stephanie and Mick, and he's lobbying for himself and Kevin Owens to be the Survivor Series team co-captains. Then we have Enzo and Cass versus Anderson and Gallows. The Good Brothers hit the Magic Killer on Enzo, and they get the win. Unfortunately, this continues the string of Enzo getting beat and Enzo and Cass taking losses. Finally, the Good Brothers won a pay-per-view match. It's just kind of like, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other, I guess. It's like the two best teams to wrestle the New Day are up here wrestling each other and not really advancing anywhere. So what do you think about Enzo's fashion this time, Didi? Do you like his
pay-per-view attire? Leopard? He had on leopard.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
Yeah, I was a fan of that aesthetic choice, yes. Mm-hmm. It did things for me.
They had a really good, reception in Boston, really good opening rap. So, I mean, they're definitely over. They're the most over thing on the show besides Jericho.
Yeah,
they get the loudest reactions. Yeah, they get the loudest reactions, even though they've been on a losing streak. So,
and they lose. They some losers, but the fans don't care.
Yeah,
which I appreciate because it's not their fault.
Yeah, it isn't. It isn't. David, what do you see going forward with Anderson and Gallows? Are they going to try to build them all the way back up to maybe make another run at New Day once New Day reaches this 451st day or whatever it is they're trying to get to?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind them getting some burn again. Like, this seems like a reset from the testicle angle that they had. So that's nice. And, I wouldn't mind seeing them kind of mix it up with if they're going to continue the Sheamus Cesaro tag team. I wouldn't mind them having a feud somewhere in the next little bit. That would be nice to see. But yeah, I like them as sort of the hands, the guys who put the good matches on. This build is resetting them. So I don't mind it. The match is what it was. It served a purpose. So
right. Classic. Are we ever going to get the Enzo and Cass versus New Day at some point before they?
Do something else with
the New Day?
They're going to hotshot Enzo and Cass versus the New Day at some point. I think that's almost a given. They're like the two most over teams, babyface teams on the Raw roster. The thing with Enzo and Cass, and this is the prevailing logic, we've seen this tweeted and talked about on the internet a lot, is they're so over that they don't need to win. You know, the crowd loves them so much, so even if they do lose, it's kind of like how Too Cool was so over, but, you know, they lost all their matches, except for when Rikishi tagged up with them. But, you know, you still wanted to see the Worm, and you still want to see Grandmaster Sexay or whatever, do their gimmick. The thing with Enzo and Kaz is they still lose often, and a lot of it's going to be Enzo kind of being the weak link. I would rather see them face up against New Day than before they do with the eventual team breakup where Kaz or Enzo turns heel or something, which is going to be years down the line and kids start crying, but they're going to sell lots of merch and they're really going to, and look, you know, Enzo and Kaz are very professional about it. They're not going to complain about losing or losing streaks because they're cashing checks. So, you know, I think this direction will continue to go where it is. They might be the ones to break New Day's streak, but I really don't doubt it because that'll put a lot of heat on Enzo and Kaz. So.
Right. So next we get Seth Rollins versus Kevin Owens, Hell in a Cell Universal title match. A lot going on in this match. Kevin Owens finds a fire extinguisher underneath the ring. He, quote-unquote, inadvertently squeezes it off into the referee's eyes. Referee is blinded. They have to get a new referee down, which means they have to open the cell to get the new referee inside the cell. As one referee is checking on the other one, trying to get him out of the cell, it makes an opportunity for Chris Jericho to jump inside the cell. He locks himself in, and they basically have a glorified handicap match, which Seth Rollins performed outstanding in this match to go up against Owens and Jericho, but after a DDT on a chair, Owens powerbombs Rollins through two chairs and gets the win to retain the Universal title. I thought this match was great. I wish, though, they wouldn't have had this version on Raw if they were going to actually have this actually take place in Hell in a Cell. So when it actually happened, it would have been like, oh, this is something I haven't seen before.
Yeah. Now, but, because Jericho was legally in the ring because it's a no DQ being Hell in a Cell, does this count as a distraction finish?
Sure. We haven't had one yet.
It's pretty much for David, I don't know. Handicap
match. Yeah. But it was all perfectly legal. If you had perfectly legal on your drinking bingo card too, you know, you pretty much were slushed by the time this match was over because everything was perfectly legal. All the stuff they pulled out all the stops. I like this match because it used, you know, it made good use of the cage and all the gimmicks underneath in terms of, like, you know, the fire extinguisher and but it for another Hell in a Cell match. This really didn't have too many. It used the cell more than the first match did, the first main event. But, you know, it kind of gave me the foreboding sense that they're probably not going to have many high spots in the final cell match. So it was kind of like, this is a good Hell in a Cell match, but this isn't, as far as like stacking up against other Hell in a Cell matches, this seemed like it was more of a warm up to the real main event. But I think most people enjoyed the fact that this came on second and not last, because that means the women were actually going to close out the show.
Right. And of course, you know, Kevin Owens with his days in ROH, you know, had a little callback spot where he stacked a couple of tables onto each other. But I think the spot of the night would have to be when Seth Rollins basically deadlifted him. When he almost dropped Kevin Owens trying to powerbomb him, he basically summoned all the strength he had and picked him back up and powerbombed him through the stacked up tables. I think that was probably one of the best moments Seth Rollins has had in the WWE ring. David, what were your takeaways from the Universal title match?
I thought, they did the same match that they did before. I think, you know, you put these guys in a ring, they're just going to have great matches. I mean, this is as great as I expected to be. The ending was as disappointing as I expected to be as well. Seth Rollins has now, I think, had a title match in every pay-per-view since he's come back. And I think he's lost every pay-per-view since he's come back. So they're going to have to figure something else out with him. I guess he's doing a Jericho feud after Survivor Series or something. But yeah, it was a great match. Again, like with Roman and Rusev in a vacuum, it's a great match.
And Dee Dee, anything you want to add about Kevin Owens or Seth Rollins?
Nah.
All right. So one of Dee Dee's favorite, Brian Kendrick, the Brian Kendrick versus TJ Perkins. Cruiserweight title match. Kendrick appears to hurt his knee after going for the sliced bread. basically they do the compassion spot where, you know, TJP's checking on him. The ref's trying to back him away. He kind of goes to a neutral corner. He can't stay there long enough. He goes back over, checks on him again. Referee tries to push him away. He tries a third time. Kendrick headbutts TJP when he comes to check in on him. And then he makes him tap out to the bully choke, or the captain hook, excuse me, and is the new cruiserweight champion, as Dee Dee is getting her life, because we all know she loves the heel life.
I love it so much. That's like perfect heel stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to, you know, lean on your dumbass empathy. You're going to check on me, even though that's not your job. And then you're going to lose. I find it awesome, personally.
Any wrestler that says he's going to, like, feed his family, they're, like, undefeated as far as, like, winning titles. So I think feed my family is the new, like, thing, betting line if you're betting on wrestling right now.
Did you like Brian Kendrick's jacket, his ring jacket, his new ring jacket he had? That's like a championship.
Everything winning about ring Brian jacket. Kendrick. Literally everything. All of the things.
Now, David, do you think that this is what's going to spruce up the cruiserweight division? Do you think Brian Kendrick is the champion to get people interested?
I hope. He's got the most character of anybody. He's recognizable. He's fun. He's the perfect heel for that division. He doesn't do a lot of flippy dippy stuff. He will put your hand in a turnbuckle and stomp on it, which is awesome. So hopefully, you know, they build him to where somebody, you know, they want to see him lose. And, you know, hopefully they build up somebody to beat him.
Rich Homie Swan.
Right.
Yeah. So next we have Dee Dee's favorite, Cesaro and Sheamus.
Yes. Well, not backstage, Sheamus, but yes.
Trying to get on the same page before their tag team title match against The New Day. So then we get The New Day versus Sheamus and Cesaro. Cesaro and Sheamus win by DQ as Kofi hits the Trouble in Paradise on Sheamus on the outside after Sheamus had hit Big E with Francesca 2 and destroyed Francesca 2. Moment of silence.
That's so rude to her. I appreciate it.
This was, David's been saying all night, just continued with the weird finish. Totally made the New Day look like the bad guys and Sheamus and Cesaro look like the good guys with the way that it played out. So I guess we're going to go on to get this again and have a conclusion, I hope, the next time that they match up, which will probably be in December. So
thoughts, when you think about it, they've been acting like bad guys. Like, they're so mean to Sheamus. It's very heel-like what they're doing to him. It's just that nobody cares because it's Sheamus.
Yeah, I was about to say, do we really care, though?
No, we don't care.
I mean, they've been, like, very respectful to Cesaro.
They love Cesaro. Cesaro loves them, which is even funnier.
Yeah, I like the whole bit about they come down to the ring, and Cesaro puts his hands up, and the crowd's like, yeah, and Sheamus puts his hands up, the crowd's like, boo! And it's like they're the same tag team. So if they win the titles, the crowd's going to be, like, half and half on cheering for them. It's kind of like, let's go Cena sucks. So, you know, good crowd participation on that part. I don't think too many people mourned Francesca too. In Boston. I'm sure we all did over online, but it was sad, but you know, we know the New Day tends to bounce back from losing mascots and instruments, so solid match all around. You know,
all right, Francesca.
David, do you think that Sheamus and Cesaro have any lasting power? Do you think that they could actually become a major act in the tag team division, or is this just temporary for two guys that they didn't have anything for?
I think they have, a nice chemistry. I think they're just trying to go with it, see what happens. And maybe this could be like the Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit type of deal where they find out, they turn out to be something that people get behind. And as far as like the New Day is concerned, I kind of like how the New Day has been heels this whole time. They've never really been actual baby faces. They've cheated every single match since becoming baby faces. And I know people want those defined rules, but I sort of like it, you know, because it kind of annoys me sometimes that people turn baby face into suddenly real noble when they had not been for, you know, years. So I like it. I like how New Day is still really heelish at all times.
Yeah. I agree, David. New Day's kind of gotten back to the heel ways. They've been really sophomoric in a lot of how they're treating Sheamus. You almost feel bad for Sheamus too, because they're like taking pictures of him next to like trash cans and stuff like that, doing all kinds of stuff on social media. So, you know, but at the same time, it's so funny that you can't help but enjoy it. You know, so yeah, they're kind of getting back to their New Day roots. Only thing they're missing is like the. Well, they've got so much stuff with their gimmick now. That's crazy. They stacked all the unicorns and the bootios and the you almost forget that they were supposed to be a gospel positivity group.
They've been mean to Sheamus since when they were the League of Nations, when they were doing those videos and they were like making fun of Sheamus for wearing lifts in his boots and all that stuff. Like they have been really, really mean to Sheamus from the beginning. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I think it's like subliminals against Triple H or something. Like they really
right,
want
yeah.
Because that's his workout buddy.
Right.
I think the only thing that they haven't touched on is him getting beat up by Sin Cara.
Right. Oh, that might be coming. Like it's coming. I feel like it's coming.
They come out of the ring in masks. Yeah. New Day can do no wrong.
We get our main event. The Boss Bay champ, Sasha Banks versus Charlotte. I guess I'm required to say Flair now since they're using it out of nowhere. I really like the way this match started, how the sale was not down as it was down for the other matches, but they introduced the ladies. The ladies got their big introduction. Charlotte came out getting carried like a queen.
I did not expect that entrance at all, and that was fantastic, actually. It's like, wow. They really are. They really did pull out some stops for Charlotte. And, you know, Sasha coming out with the Escalade, and I'm assuming it was an Escalade. I didn't really look at the card that hard. But that it was done before, and that and the whole thing the announcer's doing about Charlotte's stats, you know, this would be her 13th main event or something, it just kept tipping me off that, yeah, Charlotte might win this thing if they're really hyping it up that hard. Instead of this is Sasha Banks' first title defense, or, you know, at a pay per view since winning or whatever. They could have sold it a different way, but this was like, oh, you know, the fix is in, I guess. But let's watch this match and see.
Right. So as the cage is coming down, Charlotte attacks Sasha. She knocks her, you know, attacks her from behind, of course, targeting her back, knocks her out of the ring. It looks like at one point that the cage is going to just continue to come down and Sasha's going to be crushed, but they stop the cage. So they get out from underneath the cage. They're fighting outside around the ring. Then, of course, Sasha goes up, or Charlotte goes up to climb the cage. Sasha goes after her. Charlotte, you know, comes back down and ends up eventually powerbombing Sasha through the announce table, which it like it hurt because Sasha bounced. And anytime you bounce on the announce table, they usually say that hurts the most. So, of course, Sasha is in agony and pain. They call back, you know, the SummerSlam, lower back injuries, things like that. Doesn't look like she's going to be able to continue. She's struggling to try to walk and get herself together. Referees and medical staff are all out there, you know, trying to get her to lay down and take it easy. And Sasha's just refusing. She's trying to fight it off, walk it off. But eventually they do call for the stretcher. They put her on the stretcher. They, you know, tie her down, get her in the neck brace and all that good stuff. And then the announcer gets in the ring and announces that Charlotte was going to be the winner by forfeit. And of course, the Boss Babe jumps off the stretcher, jumps back in the ring, bell rings, and then we get into our Hell in the Cell match for the women's title. Just kind of weird ending. I guess it was set up for Sasha to actually go through the table, but Charlotte throws Sasha off of the table twice because she bounced and rolled off, and then kind of hits her with a natural selection, and Charlotte wins the women's title to remain undefeated in pay-per-views and become the 3-time women's champion. So, disappointing finish for everybody on this call, for sure, and probably for the whole wrestling community. I think that everybody would have had a much different outlook on this match if Charlotte is the one who lost and not the one who won. So, Dee Dee, I'll start with you, since this was a momentous occasion in wrestling history.
Okay, everybody knows I stand for Sasha. That's already known, but my thing was, they want Charlotte. It's clear. It's obvious. So if you're going to have Charlotte win, you need to make sure that the way Charlotte wins is epic in accordance with this being the first Hell in a Cell match for women, along with being the first main event of a pay-per-view, or one of the first main events for the pay-per-view. You don't let the girl bounce off the table and then just be like, oh, well, that'll just have to do for the end. No! Come up with something. Throw her into the cage a little more. Find a fucking kendo stick. Don't just be like, ugh, didn't work. Guess we're just going to end the match. Like, no. When the match ended, there weren't even that many boos. It was just like, that's it? Like, if you don't have the girl I don't want win, make me hate it. Don't make me be like, oh, that was stupid. Because then everybody failed.
Right. I heard that a lot of people, from the way the table was set up, they couldn't even see the finish. So that's kind of why, maybe for that reaction of where people were just like, what happened?
Wow. That's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. So what I'm thinking was that when she set the table up at the angle, that she was supposed to throw her through the
table. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then hit the natural selection, or just the force of her throwing her through the table would, you know, make it be the pinfall due to the beginning of the match. But with Sasha being so light, she put it on the second rope, the second turnbuckle, and not the top one. And I guess it just wasn't enough of an angle for her to get, you know.
Well, seems to me that when the first one didn't work, then you go readjust the damn table and throw her into another one. If it doesn't work, throw her into it again. If it doesn't work, throw her into it again. Like, who cares?
Or body slam her through
it. Body slam her into it. Flip her and suplex her into it. Don't just be like, oh, well. No, yeah. This is stupid.
And I think that that's kind of the thing that the old timers would say is a knock on the newer generation, is everything is so paint by the numbers that if something does go wrong in a match that they don't expect, they don't have the ability to fix it on the fly, like you're talking about.
I don't understand why they don't put in contingencies. I think that's my issue. Like, I like things planned out. And my question would be, well, what if that shit don't work? Then what we do?
Right.
Like, why wouldn't that be a question you ask when you are main eventing a pay-per-view? I would ask.
Not just main eventing the pay-per-view. This match had also the cachet of Mick Foley helping to hype this main event. Helping to hype this Hell in a Cell match. And we've seen the Mick Foley Hell in the Cells, almost all of them, and we know that, you know, he's fallen off the cell. He's been set on fire. He's thrown down thumbtacks. So after the first two Hell in a Cell matches of the night, you know, being what they were, we kind of, you know, I kind of went into this one expecting that, okay, well, this is going to knock those two out the box because they purposely just did certain things. Like we did an interference spot with Jericho. We did kendo sticks and ring steps. We're going to see either some high spots or some, you know, some hardcore stuff going on. And look, by itself, the match was actually a pretty good match as far as, like, you know, the brutality, use of the cell, you know, slamming people into the side of the cell, the monkey flip spot, then the spot off the cell into the table and outside the ring before the match even starts was great. It's just that there was nothing as far as, like, what would make this a Mick Foley-style match. You know, no one threw any thumbtacks down. No one in the entire pay-per-view got above where Charlotte powerbombed Sasha off the side of the cell. Not above that altitude. So, like, no one got on the roof of the cell. No one got, like, a top turnbuckle and then climbed onto the corner of the cell and, like, tried to do a spot off of there. It was like, we got teased with that, but it was like nothing. And I understand, you know, we're concerned about safety and stuff, but if you're going to do Hell in a Cell, do Hell in a Cell. Women, men, nothing. You know, this is kind of the point to do it at. And I read some dirt sheets today, and they were talking about how they were going to do a high spot with Charlotte, you know, leaping off the cell onto Sasha, but they decided not to because Vince said, or when he was worried about safety. And, you know, it's kind of like when you see a movie and it's disappointing and you read, oh, yeah, well, this is the scene they deleted. Fuck that shit. He's like, you know, that's kind of where I'm like, well, damn, the director didn't really just let us down now because you're not deleting scenes and shit, trying to do too much, and you take away from what could have been a great epic event and made it. It was still pretty good.
Yeah, but when you think about it, did Charlotte do anything at Hell in a Cell that was more impressive than when she did that last flip off the top rope that other week on Raw?
No.
How you leaving your better spots for Raw?
Yeah, so, I mean, this was a steel cage match, but, you know, as far as Hell in a Cell goes, it was brutal for the two of them for how they were able to interact with each other and use the cell, but it's still underwhelming as far as, you know, what they could have actually added to the match. The table spot at the end was just sloppy, and so for them to finish with that and have the finish come off of that, to me, was just underwhelming or disappointing, but it was more so because you were expecting more by that time in the match, even though it was a pretty long and grueling bout between those two. I mean, I still applaud the two of them for putting their bodies out there on the line. This is not, like, something easy to do, man or woman, but, you know, it just could have been laid out a little better as far as, you know, and you had Mick Foley hype the damn thing. That's my whole thing. David, I don't know. What do you think? Do you agree?
Yeah, I think the thing that messed up the match, they had the best begin. The beginning of the match was about as hot as a beginning to a match as I can remember. I was hyped. It was like a sporting event. They were going at each other, tearing at each other. And then they do like a 10-minute stretcher spot in the middle of it. And, you know, that throws off the momentum. They got the cables, you know, attached to her, stuck to her weave, to her neck brace, and they got to get that out. And then they managed to salvage that because she's beating up refs and it's hype. But they, you know, I would go back and forth on the decision to have Charlotte win. It was okay because it's like, all right, she is the heel. People are angry. It's okay to be angry at her because she's the heel. But then, like, that table spot, if Sasha wins, okay, you can forgive a whole lot of things if Sasha wins because you're just happy. And the moment is big. You have your first women's main event, the babyface champion in front of her hometown, home crowd. She may be on top of the cell celebrating, and it's a big sporting event feel, and it fell flat. And like Dee Dee was saying, if you're going to have Charlotte win, you got to have an ending that makes it okay. You know, that makes me feel like, okay, she did what she needed to do to win, and the table spot was not it. Even if the table broke,
yeah,
I don't know how impressive that spot is. She just flung her on the table and then hit the natural selection.
It could have used more, and even if they were concerned about like high spots being dangerous to the women, have an interference thing like how Kane ripped off the door to the Hell in a Cell. Have Dana Brooke come down, and you know she comes in double teams, and next thing you have Bayley come down, and then you're pretty much injecting the other women into this feud. But at the same time, at the end of it, Charlotte wins. Sasha wins. People go happy, but you know you still have an epic match or something. It left us wanting, which, you know, is kind of disappointing because I think we all, you know, to almost every last one of us want these women to succeed, putting them in the main event and putting them out there. It's like, you know, regardless, it was still epic and it was still, you know, historic. And we still, you know, have that as perspective. But, you know, it's kind of like, oh, man, we wanted more for these two.
Yeah, I don't think I think the match was still great. I just don't think I think the things that hurt the match really did not have much to do with Sasha or Charlotte. It was the stretcher spot, tables not breaking, and then the decision to have Charlotte go over.
Yeah, I felt like I got my $9.97 worth out of the WWE Network this month out of this match. So,
yeah, I think I got your $9.99 worth too. So
they owe me 2 cents though.
Yeah, so that was Hell in a Cell for this year. Probably like a B show, I guess. I mean, it could have been epic, like David has said multiple times, like last he said, like I've said in Gidi as well. If a couple of tweaks to a couple of finishes, and this is probably, you know, one of the best shows Raw has done, would have been probably their best pay-per-view since the brand split, but they're still behind, pass to the tag, SmackDown matters, so...
If Foley came out and climbed to the top of the cell and just jumped on a table by himself, that would have made the match better. Like, what is he doing? Why is he doing this? Who cares? It's Hell in a Cell.
Your desire to be one of us has been met with skepticism by some. Huh? After all, you are a snake. A serpent. And a serpent has always represented treachery. Evil. Some might even say the devil himself. But I say, anyone with credentials like that is welcome in the Wyatt family.
I was born with the devil whispering in my ear. I'm done trying to fight it. It's almost as if the darkness has shown me the light. Bray, you are a god.
So now we're going to move into Monday Night Raw, and that was coming to us from Hartford, Connecticut.
Hashtag show starts.
That's right. Join us every Monday night, 8 p.m. The show starts hot with Goldberg making his entrance. He gets to the ring to address Brock when Heyman comes out. Heyman says that Goldberg would be smart to assume that he brought some backup in the form of Brock. He says that Brock is the impatient type. He's in the building. Paul then announces Brock to come out. His music plays. We wait. Anticipation builds. But he doesn't come out. Paul says that he should see the look on Goldberg's face and the look on his son's face as well. Paul says it's going to be a shame that his son is going to watch his father get destroyed by Brock. Rusev then comes out. He talks down to Goldberg. Calls him washed up. Calls him old. Doesn't think he has it. Questions his heart and his toughness. Then he takes a shot at Goldberg. Goldberg no-sells it. They have a small brawl that ends in Goldberg hitting the jackhammer on Rusev, and then he turns and hits a spear on Paul Heyman. So, Dee Dee,
mm-hmm.
What did you think about seeing Bill Goldberg get physical for the first time in like 15 years?
That's a big man. Like, I didn't know he was that big still.
Yes. He seems overdressed for these appearances.
He does. Though. Like, he's got on too many layers.
Yeah.
Like, it's hot. You should take it off.
Well, I was suspicious when he first came back and he had on that big coat. In the jacket in the ring, and he's still sweating. And I'm like, "Yo, dude, you're indoors now. You could take that off." But I thought about it. And remember when the Ultimate Warrior came back, and he was like a lot smaller than he was, and people were like, "That's not the Ultimate Warrior. That's some dude with face paint. That's not really him." Like, no, that's him. He just hasn't been lifting. You know, he's been out of action for a while. So, I mean, I was actually watching this comeback that one night, going, "Goldberg, are you still lifting, bro?" And then he comes back with the jacket again. I'm like, oh, come on, Bill. You know, I guess you're getting your weight up for this match. But when he took his jacket off, it was like, oh, okay, he still got something. You know, he's still cut. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what kind of Goldberg goes into this match, you know, working off not only rust, but probably getting back into wrestling shape. I mean, he keeps in shape. It's been reported and well known, but it's just, you know, the jacket thing was kind of weird. So I'm glad he actually showed off his Affliction tee from 2004, you know, but hey, that's neither here nor there. Affliction is still a great brand. I'm sure many people enjoy it.
David, how great do you think Vince felt that this crowd actually did what he wanted to do and they could make Brock the heel in this particular, this week, unlike the week before in Minneapolis?
Yeah, we did not have Paul Heyman begging people to boo Brock Lesnar for 10 minutes, which was a relief. But, you know, Goldberg fell or had trouble getting his knees up, and I saw that he said that he has not actually trained in a ring yet for his return. So I am fully convinced that when Brock Lesnar suplexes him for the first time, he'll turn into dust like Michael Jackson. Remember the times?
Damn.
So I'm not quite sure exactly how long this match is going to be. I'm really nervous about it. But it's really weird that Goldberg is cutting the best promos of his life now.
Yeah.
He's like finally found a character after 12 years away, which is pretty great. But I don't know how he's going to be able to handle it physically.
Yeah, I mean, Paul, I attributed to him having his own podcast and doing speaking engagements and stuff. Goldberg's, you know, even when he was wrestling, was pretty well read and quite an intelligent individual. You know, it's one of those things where you don't know that much about the guy, but you realize, okay, yeah, there's more to him than just the wrestling. We've just seen that now. This is also from years of experience and not having to be in the ring. He's actually, you know, been involved with so many things. So he's a lot more, what do you call that?
Polished.
Yeah, polished, erudite. What do they call Barack Obama? What they say but basically he's that.
And he probably gets the benefit of not having somebody hand him a piece of paper, too. So that helps out.
Yeah. I'm sure he does the Stone Cold thing where they hand him the script and he crumbles it up into a ball and throws it and just shoots from the hip. I like the fact that he keeps talking about being a superhero to the kids. And we're like, yay. You know, the kids are like, I guess you're our superhero. Take your jacket off, dude.
So we get our first match of the night. Enzo versus Luke Gallows in a trick or treat fight. This was Monday night, so the ruling had came down on Monday about Billy Corgan not winning the injunction. And there was a lot of Smashing Pumpkins being tossed around in this match just for the irony and, you know, Vince just being super petty. They did get those in there, so I hope Billy Corgan wasn't watching Raw. But after hitting Anderson with a pumpkin pie for getting on the apron, Cass gives him a big boot through the table. They put a pumpkin on Gallows, and Enzo hits the DDG to get the pin. They had a little problem with this pumpkin, and Gallows, God bless him, did his best to try to make the spot go through, but it wasn't the cleanest. And then Kevin Dunn had the bright idea to show it to everybody in slow motion so they could see it wasn't the cleanest. So some bad work in the truck by Kevin Dunn didn't really help Enzo or Gallows out in this situation to try to, you know.
Didn't matter. This is a gimmick match. This is Halloween. You know, it's like when Thanksgiving Raw hits, they're going to throw pies and have, like, turkey legs and stuff.
But it was highly entertaining, though.
It was. It was fantastically entertaining. The Toy Story jokes were fantastic. The fact that, you know, they kept talking about Andy and the gal and to Infinity and Beyond and all those bits. And the costumes were just funny as hell.
Yeah, forgot. They did come dressed up as Big Enzo and Big Cass as Toy Story. So, yeah, that was actually pretty cool. David, anything you want to add?
No. So, I watch Raw as Hulu. So...
Oh, okay.
If it don't make it on Hulu, then I don't watch it. Because I can't take 3 hours of Raw. I can't.
That's why we invented the broadcast. It makes it a lot more tolerable.
Right. Yeah. So you know, if it doesn't happen if it doesn't make it to Hulu, it's pretty much dead to me.
All right. That's fair. Dee, anything that you'd like to say about your boo Enzo getting a win? As we talked about him always losing. Got to talk about him winning, so.
Well, I'm very happy for him. And he likes fluffy girls, so, you know, double points. Double points.
All right. Simmer down.
You know, I just need young little folks to know that she's out of the running because she doesn't fit the criteria.
Uh-oh. That sounds like
a little internet more heat there going on.
some sparring words. Not quite fighting, but sparring for sure. Okay, so they go to the back. They show an ambulance, and reportedly it was transporting Paul Heyman to the Hartford Medical Center after he got speared by Goldberg. Then we have a return match for the Cruiserweight title, TJ Perkins versus Brian Kendrick. Kendrick cuts a promo on how Perkins fell into his trap. They didn't need any help to win, just like DD was saying, that he knew that Perkins would be soft, and basically anybody who is soft is always going to finish last. TJ does a hurricanrana to Kendrick. They both land on the outside of the ring. TJ beats the count. Kendrick starts to get back in the ring, but changes his mind and basically just gets counted out to retain the title. So, DD, do you approve of these heel tactics?
I approve of every heel tactic. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did he know that promo? This is exactly how you felt that, you know, Perkins was just so emotional.
I mean, it's obvious. He's a sensitive soul. So it's smart to take advantage.
Right. David, do you think they built enough heat with this finish on Brian Kendrick to get people not to be behind him so they can move everything forward with him being a heel champion and not really worth a damn to anybody?
Well, the heat sort of got transferred to TJ Perkins' head going up through his body and out of his asshole as he was trying to do the Hurricanrana spot, and he almost died. That was really scary. So the heat sort of got moved to how I was afraid that TJ Perkins was dead. So I actually did not. That was all I could think about as the match was ending.
Yeah, he did take a nasty spill. He had his neck and head on the ring apron, which, as we all know, is the hardest part of the ring.
Right.
So, yeah, hopefully he doesn't have a concussion, because that probably would be the thing that would have happened to him, since he didn't seriously injure himself.
Right.
Classic, any thoughts on this Cruiserweight rematch?
I'm concerned that TJ Perkins is not on the concussion protocol. He's actually not my favorite wrestler, particularly because, and I've not watched the Cruiserweight Classic that often, but the 8-bit entrance with the video game theme and everything and that whole bit, that's just great for me because, you know, I'm old school. And so to me, it's like, that's freaking awesome. And so he's my favorite wrestler right now. He can do no wrong. I like the fact that Brian Kendrick is going to hold on to this belt, and he's the wily veteran of the Cruiserweight division. You know, he's gonna get by hook by crook, and someone's gonna rise up and take it from him eventually. But I think it's good. It really does a lot for the division to have a great heel at the top to really, you know, set these guys in line and give them something to shoot for. Makes it a little less boring, because now you got the Brian Kendrick. He's gonna basically just heel it up each week, and you're gonna want to see who takes him down. So it could be TJP, it could be someone else, but you know, really makes it wide open for the rest of the division.
Right. So we get Mick Foley with a backstage promo that gets interrupted by Braun Strowman. He says that he's looking for better competition, and that he also wants to be a part of the Raw team at Survivor Series. Foley tells Braun that he will have a chance to earn a spot if he wins a Battle Royal later on tonight. So then Mick Foley comes out to the ring. He talks about Hell in the Cell from Sunday night. He praises everybody except for Jericho and Owens. Foley says that even though it was legal, it still didn't sit well with him. And then all of a sudden, Kevin Owens' music hits. Owens and Jericho come out. Kevin gets in, and he goes through a list of scenarios why Foley would be mad. Owens said that they stole the show, and he made history as the first man to defend the Universal title in Hell in a Cell. They go back and forth over the Survivor Series when Mick introduces Roman to the mix. He says that, you know, yes, he's going to have Owens and Jericho, and they could be the co-captains, but he's also got to have the guy on the team as well. So that's how Roman gets into the mix. Jericho teases that, you know, he's going to put Roman on the list. But then he says nobody is going on the list tonight. Jericho makes a challenge towards the U.S. title and says that he would be a better U.S. champion and that he's from Canada. And Mick says that's a good idea, and they make the match for later on tonight. Again, Jericho over like Roper. It is over. The list is over. Stupid idiot is over. Anything else that I missed?
Drink it in, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Drink it in, man. It's over. But you know what was cool, though? He didn't put him on the list, and so now he got people to boo that. So, you know, he's tweaking little things to, you know, still be heel.
Yeah, it was foreshadowing for the rest of the night, because the list became a major player in the entire evening. Which, you know, was kind of funny. I saw tweets about it, complaining about it. I was like, no, but this is fun. This is good TV right here. What are you talking about?
Right.
List needs its own, like, Twitter account.
Despite somebody hadn't, despite that WWE hadn't capitalized on that yet. They're really savvy about things like that.
Just get the jump on them before the smoking section takes does something.
So then we get a recap of the Hell in a Cell match between Sasha and Charlotte. Then we have the Survivor Series Battle Royal. The last two remaining are Sami Zayn and Braun Strowman. Zayn gets close but can't quite eliminate Braun. Strowman eliminates Zayn and earns a spot with Roman Reigns, Jericho, and Owens on Team Raw. Any thoughts on the Battle Royal or the ending or Sami Zayn putting up a good effort but not quite?
They really sold Strowman, of course, as the big man. That a lot of competitors trying to get him out. He got a lot of folks out. I think the finish with him and Sami Zayn as the final two is kind of expected, but at the same time, it was kind of like, you know, also like that great David and Goliath. They finally get that matchup, but this doesn't count because they're not actually in a match, you know, one on one. I don't think this is over. The fact that you know, Zayn got tossed out, I think he's still going to hold a grudge, and I think at some point before Survivor Series, I'm making this prediction, Zayn is going to like injure Strowman somehow. I don't know if he's going to give him a Tonya Harding or something, but Strowman's going to not be able to compete, and Zayn's going to end up taking a spot at the Survivor Series, and that's going to even further this feud because, of course, when Strowman comes back from whatever kayfabe it is, the two of them are going to keep fighting like Peter and the Chicken. It's going to be great.
Now, David, have you liked what they've done with Braun Strowman since the brand split? Are you feeling, you know, Braun moving up into mid-card level now?
Yeah, I mean, they've done the, you know, sometimes old school is all you need. Like, just really basic, we're going to have this guy squash jobbers, then he's going to work his way up. I mean, that's just how you build monster heels, and they're doing, like, the classic way, and it's sort of working, and Sami Zayn is, like, the perfect guy for that. So, when that, you know, I think that they'll, you know, they'll build this, they'll probably, Sami Zayn might, I agree, he's going to interrupt somehow and get, either interfere in the Survivor Series match or before or something, but I think that this is you know, it's a nice feud for him ever since. I'm glad he's doing something, because ever since he had a 5-star match with Kevin Owens, they've decided to punish him for whatever reason. So,
why is everybody muted?
What happened?
Unmute yourselves.
Sorry, I hit that button. The New Day is backstage, and they're dressed up as all of the characters played by Charles Wright, a.k.a. Kama Mustafa, a.k.a. Papa Shango, and a.k.a. The Godfather. Kofi was The Godfather, Xavier was Papa Shango, and Big E was Kama Mustafa. So they cut their promo. Really good promo, lots of fun, New Day doing their thing. Just the visual of it was just fantastic, so. Great spot, of course, by the New Day. So then we get a 6-man cruiserweight match between Rich Homie Swan, Lindsay Dorado, Cedric Alexander versus Drew Gulak, Tony Nese, and Daivari. Rich Swan hits the Rich kick, then follows it up with the jackknife cover, and they get the win. This was a pretty good match, too. I mean, it seems like the combination of Lindsay Dorado and Cedric Alexander worked really well. And the combination of Drew Gulak and Tony Nese work really well. And then they can just throw a third guy in there and, you know, they can have variations of the matches. So I was entertained. I'm a big Rich Swan fan. I think we all are here. So between Rich and Cedric, I think, and, you know, Kendrick having the title, I think we got at least two or three programs that could really set it off, you know, to start off the new year, maybe heading into WrestleMania season even. So any thoughts, comments, or concerns on this match? David, anything you want to add?
Looking forward to the 1-hour cruiserweight special. I mean, show. then these matches will stand out more. They'll get more time, and it'll be sort of, you know, like if you told me, if you played one of these matches, I wouldn't be able to really tell you which episode of Raw they came from.
Right. So then we get a promo by the Queen, Charlotte. She talks about winning the title for the third time. She puts Nikki Bella and all the other women on SmackDown on notice. Charlotte then turns her attention to Bayley, who she called a weak link, and that if she wanted to be on her team, she would have to, you know, prove that she wasn't. So, of course, Bayley comes out. She says, first, she starts with compliments. She says that they dream to reach a level, you know, of main eventing pay-per-views and main eventing Raw when they were NXT. She congrats Charlotte, but then Charlotte runs her down on being the weakest link. Bayley says she doesn't want to be a champion like Charlotte, and then Charlotte just voluntarily makes a match between Nia Jax and Bayley. So we have Nia Jax versus Bayley. Nia pins Bayley with the Samoan drop. RIP Bayley. Hate it had to be you. It was good to see Nia Jax for the first time in like a month. They put her in the mix with the top players, so that was cool. I don't know. I think that Charlotte needs like the enforcer role, and too bad Dana dropped the ball, but it would be super impressive if Nia Jax became like Charlotte's eater and those two, you know, went through roughhousing people. So, David, give me your thoughts on what you thought about that, if Nia Jax became Charlotte's bodyguard.
Well, yeah, so why didn't Nia Jax just interrupt the Hell in a Cell and beat up Sasha Banks and let Charlotte win the belt?
It, hey, that would have worked.
She would have had the Kane spot. She could have ripped the cell door off.
Right. You know, really sold that. I mean, I guess they might not have wanted to do that since they did the same exact thing with Jericho and Owens and Seth Rollins. Maybe that's why they didn't do it. But if I had to pick one, I'd rather see it in the Sasha and Charlotte match. Because that's heat. That's everybody's upset. That's, you know, real angry crowd. And you get an ending that makes sense. And you have Nia Jax leg dropping the hell out of Sasha Banks about 10 times. And then Charlotte gets the pin. So, you know, that's all I could think about during that whole segment.
Right. Right. Dee Dee, anything you wanted to add? Did you feel sorry for Bayley having to go up against Nia? I mean, she did put up a good fight. Now you're the one with the button.
That button.
Well, we'll talk about four of her favorites. Sheamus and Cesaro versus the Shining Stars. Sheamus makes one of the scammers tap out to the sharpshooter. The other one tries to break it up, coming off the top rope, but Cesaro kisses him with the uppercut. So the finish of the sequence looked really cool. Nothing much really to add here. Aspen shows that Sheamus and Cesaro, when the bell rings, can actually like get along and wrestle with each other. But then as soon as the match is over, they go back to having a difference of opinion. So,
did you call them the scammers?
Yes, the Shining Stars.
I want to claim schism, but I can't argue with you. They are some scammers.
So then we get another backstage promo with Jericho and Owens, where Chris Jericho was talking about, you know, he's won just about every title there is to win in WWE. The only one that he has not won is the United States Championship, and that he would make a much better champion than Roman Reigns, and they were going to rename it the Canadian Championship once he won it. So we get into our main event.
Lance Jericho. Storm's mentions filled up at that time, by the way, on Twitter, I'm pretty sure.
Jericho versus Roman Reigns for the United States Championship. Roman hits the spear on Jericho, but Owens stops the count, and the ref calls for the DQ. Owens and Jericho are beating down Roman when Seth comes in to make the save. Owens retreats and doubles back to save Jericho from a pedigree. After the match, Roman and Seth have a stare down and tease like a Shield reunion. So the one time that everybody was really happy to see Roman Reigns was when he was in the ring with Seth Rollins. Everybody was cheering for that. So it still got the magic. If WWE wants to ever go back to that well again, they always know that they can. David, would you like to finish? Did you like the main event? Jericho and is just having good matches with everybody, it seems like. So, you know, got another good match out of Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns got a good match out of Jericho.
Yeah, my question with the whole thing with Jericho is, where does this latest run, I've been asking, how far does that move him up all time? Because he's doing some of his best stuff. And like, if you had him at like top 10, is he like now top 5? If you had him in top 20, is he now top 10? Like, this has been just like his best work probably since he was feuding with Shawn Michaels like the last time.
Right.
So I know I didn't answer your question, but that's just my thoughts on the whole thing. No,
I agree with that thought. In fact, this is what Foley and Stone Cold did when they couldn't wrestle anymore. Jericho's doing it and still able to wrestle.
Right.
So he's like semi-retired, one foot out the door, but he's kept his body in great shape over the years to the point now where he can like just kind of sit back, wrestle a few matches, be on the road, still take time off for Fozzie and for his podcast and other things, and still cut, you know, quality promos, develop great gimmicks. If anything, as far as personalities, talkers or personality, you know, wrestlers that can actually sell a match or sell anything, I would put him top five, if not top 10, as far as, you know, his personality and character goes. He's probably one of the greatest characters in pro wrestling right now.
Right. And it basically shows you that he was trying to do all this stuff in WCW, but he was one, really young, and two, they just didn't understand, you know, his knowledge of his own character at such a young age.
But it was where the big boys played, you know, it was,
Right. Right. So just the way that he, like, he says that every time that he's, you know, left and come back, that he's always tried to change it up. So, you know, at first it was, you know, the shiny rain jackets and the long tights and things. Then when he came back, he kind of had like the suit, and then he started introducing the short tights. Then when he came back, you know, this time it's the scarf and, you know, the list and these catchphrases now seem to be like his big thing, where he's taking it back to like Attitude Era, where everybody had a catchphrase. Now it doesn't seem to be too prevalent, and he's, you know, drawing back to that time, and that's over too now. So, yeah, he's just him and AJ Styles have definitely been the two standouts this year in WWE for sure. Just, you know, in-ring, character, promo, just the whole package. So big ups to Chris Jericho. And, you know, we'll see where the Survivor thing series thing goes and how long can they milk out this Kevin Owens and Jericho thing. I mean, if they could get to WrestleMania with it, that would be fantastic. Where they slow it down a little bit and, you know, they win a couple more feuds together, and then finally Jericho decides he's going to put Kevin Owens on the list. And
yeah,
we go from there.
Another plus on this is it gives Kevin Owens a boost for his title run. You know, when they're together on screen, on camera, and they do promos together, you can tell Kevin Owens is like fighting off laughter. He's having so much fun, like just chilling with Jericho. You know, he's probably hoop backstage, but you know, it makes it fun for Owens on top of doing the work and everything, that he's got such a like a wild and zany character to be on camera with. You can tell every time that they're on screen that he's just fighting off, you know, laughing his ass off through all the promos.
Right, and they definitely improvise and work off each other really well. So I think that's been the biggest thing, that the takeaway is just how they kind of fill in the gaps with each other. And you can tell where the script ends and where their, you know, thoughts and things begin. So that was Monday Night Raw for this week. You know, pretty decent show. Had more talking and kind of more backstage stuff than, you know, normal. But, I mean, I guess that's expected after such a brutal pay-per-view the night before. You know, have to give the guys some breaks on their bodies and things. So I was fairly enjoyable. Didn't seem to drag as they do sometimes. So I was satisfied. So, of course, this is the time that we turn it over to our SmackDown correspondent, SmackDown Matters, hash to the tag, Miss Dee Dee Jonet, if she's ready to do her SmackDown Matters.
Well, before we do, as Dee Dee gets ready, we should pay a bill or two. And okay. You know, who better than the producer of the network to actually jump on and do a promo? Save money and keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. How you can do that as a listener of the WrestleCast is to visit our network website, our official website, cspn.us. That's cspn.us. Then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, you can scroll and see the Amazon link and shop at Amazon. You can buy anything that you want from Amazon, whether it's used Halloween costumes or foreign objects that people throw on football fields or in primetime games, or any other things that you feel that you want to get, including Black Friday deals before even Black Friday. You know, I don't know if you want to call it Darker Friday or not, but you can get anything from Amazon. Gifts for your friends and loved ones, relatives and neighbors, power tools if you want to, like, just blow those leaves out your front yard. Anything you want on Amazon. And not only do you get these awesome things shipped to your home, you get Amazon Prime, you get free shipping, by the way, free two-day shipping. That's a good plus right there. But you help us save money. But only if you go to cspn.us, our official site, and then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. That helps keep our podcast free for you so that we don't have to basically run out of money trying to give you this podcast that you're getting for the low, the free 99. So do that. We appreciate it. Do it today. Amazon through cspn.us. Again, do it. Not tomorrow. Do it today. And now I throw it over to you, Dee Dee.
Okay. This week's SmackDown is from Newark, New Jersey. James Ellsworth came out to start the show. He's got his own theme music. It's nice.
Pop for Ellsworth.
Yeah, everybody pops for Ellsworth. He's the guy. He thanks Shane and Daniel for letting him come out and say goodbye. And the crowd screams, "No!" He says he hasn't been able to eat or sleep, and he won't be able to move on until he apologizes to Dean. So Dean comes out, puts his hand on Ellsworth. Ellsworth is kind of scared. He says, Ambrose says he's had a lot of time to think about, you know, ripping his head off, but I see you, I'm not mad, I forgive you, blah, blah, blah. Ellsworth says he can't forgive himself after Ambrose helped him beat AJ twice. Ellsworth says he made a mistake. The Ambrose is like, yeah, it's cool. And he's sorry. And he's like extra sorry. Like the kind of sorry that makes the person uncomfortable. It's that kind of sorry. So they're interrupted by AJ. AJ's like, why would you ever apologize to Dean? You need to apologize to me. He tells the crowd to shut up. AJ tells Ellsworth that Ambrose has been using him, but Styles respects him. And he says he was going to make their match quick and easy, but Ambrose pushed him into beating Ellsworth up. And then he says Ellsworth should be thanking him, not Ambrose. And because of him, they're buying the t-shirts and the things and all the things and more things. And then AJ talks Ellsworth out of the ring.
He said he owed him a portion of his merchandise check in his entire career, by the way. It was like, wow. He had receipts.
I mean, spot the lie. But,
for real.
Yeah, so he tosses Ellsworth out of the ring and nails Ambrose with a phenomenal forearm. Daniel Bryan confronts Ellsworth and Ambrose backstage, tells them they need to calm down. James apologizes again. Ambrose doesn't care. Daniel tells Ambrose he'll get one more shot at AJ tonight to become the number one contender. However, no matter what, this is the last chance. And therefore, Ellsworth can stay backstage and watch, but he's not allowed at ringside so that there are no problems. That's for later. Next match is Randy Orton versus Kane in a no DQ match. The things, they happen, which includes the Wyatts coming down. And,
shenanigans. Lights go out. Yes, shenanigans.
Distractions. Yes. All sorts of things. So Kane ends up fighting off the two Wyatts and Randy for, a good chunk of time. But then he attempts to do a choke slam on Luke. Orton manages to slide and hit an RKO for the win. Afterwards, Orton stares down Harper. I thought Harper was going to turn on Bray because I was like, why are you staring at him like that? But no. Kane got up, so Harper nailed him with a discus clothesline. He was about to attack Kane again, but Orton pushed Kane into Bray, who hit Kane with his sister Abigail. And then they do their poses, and Bray says, follow the buzzards, and everybody's looking a little concerned. But yeah.
Yeah, follow the buzzards, hear the voices from the Vipers, and all heels matter. Apparently, if you get a Randy Orton hoodie today from WWE Shop, they'll throw in an All Lives Matter t-shirt for you. So,
oh, stop.
I have to. It's a must.
I mean, David, do you watch SmackDown?
Yes, I do watch SmackDown. All 2 hours of SmackDown are on Hulu, so I get to watch it all. SmackDown is great. I cannot wait for the nuclear heat of the heel turn from Buddy Dean Ambrose's chinless friend.
No, chinless. Yeah, Ellsworth. He is going full Danny Davis.
Yeah, Ellsworth. Like that'll be that's going to be great when he finally turns on Dean Ambrose and brutally attacks him. And
brutally attacks.
Yeah, they can give him a new nickname. They can call him like the Man at Meerkat or something like that.
It'll be great. Like SmackDown just does some like they the best thing SmackDown has ever done. The best joke they've ever done was when AJ Styles tried to put him in a chin lock, but he could not. Like that's just brilliant. That's just brilliant on a whole nother level. Like that's like too brilliant for wrestling. Like it was just too good for something that would happen in WWE or any wrestling, for instance. And it's just that sort of brilliance is what's like. That's why the brand split is great.
James Ellsworth is the William Hung of wrestling. He has no business being there, but he's a megastar. He's so over with the fans. It's crazy.
Do you know that William Hung was at the American Idol finale a decade and change later, and people still went up for that man? Like, pressed. Hey, maybe that can be James Ellsworth. I mean, Doink the Clown made a career out of it. So, why not James Ellsworth?
When you're a star, you're a star. Regardless of how long it's been since you were in the, the brightest of the spotlight, you're still a star. Hey man, people still go crazy to go see JJ.
JJ who?
Dynamite.
Evans.
Oh, yes.
Lord. He dated Ann Coulter. Like that should stop everybody from dealing with him.
Well, hey man, love who you want to love.
Ew, gross. Anyway, there was a promo for Baron Corbin. He had on a hat, so he looked quite nice.
It was like a video vignette thing too. Yeah, he said he's a loner and he hates everybody.
Yeah, and it's like, that's Brock Lesnar. Try again. Next was a tag team match, Alexa and Carmella versus Becky and Nikki. The things, they happen. Becky hit a reverse DDT on Alexa, but Carmella distracted the referee. Then Becky knocked Carmella off the apron, but Bliss raked her eyes and then hit a DDT for the win.
You know who's the most happiest besides Scarlet Central R? That Alexa is bringing back the DDT? Stone Cold.
She's
beating people with the DDT. She's not just using it to
make
it
look cool. Finisher.
Make the DDT great again.
That's right.
Didn't it used to be Diamond Dallas Page's finisher too? The Diamond Cutter? Is that not a DDT?
No, not a DDT. That's the RKO.
Oh, that's the RKO.
Yeah.
Oh, that is the RKO. Yeah. Funny. Afterwards, the new big booty girl on the announcers team tried to interview the girls, but they kicked her out. And so then Alexa interviewed Carmella, and they were quite annoying.
Excuse me, Didi. She has a name. It's Dasha Fuentes.
I'm sick. I didn't feel like saying things in Spanish.
With that blue dress, I had to know her name. So, yes, it's Dasha Fuentes, and she's
welcome. Oh, yeah. The WrestleCast follows her.
Yes, CrewCast. she can make all the mistakes she wants, and we will forgive every last one of them. Thank you very much. As our official position as a network and a WrestleCast as a crew as a record label.
Aim high.
Yes.
Aim high. Carmella said some shady things about Bayley and Charlotte. And told Nikki to let her run. Oh, this is about Survivor Series. Yeah, and so then Alexa calls herself the Wicked Witch of SmackDown and said she would win the title next week in Glasgow. Glasgow?
Yeah.
I don't know how the natives say it. Backstage, Brian and Shane let Nay know she is the fifth member of Team SmackDown for the Survivor Series women's match. The rest of the team is Becky, Nikki, Carmella, and Alexa.
Classic, did you feel the glow?
I felt the glow. My eyes still had spots in them after she even left the segment from all the glowing and everything. But I think that's just, you know, my old age and my television settings. Yeah, I like that Natty came out, and I guess Dee Dee, you'll get to that too.
Yeah, she's officially the coach of Team SmackDown.
Not only is she the coach, but she tends to quote a lot of classic black singers' lyrics. You know, it's like last week was Whitney Houston, this week was Aretha Franklin. Like, what's going on with Natty?
And then denying that it didn't act like it was her, like she came up with it herself. She's doing some great mic work. By the way,
she is. I don't know.
Oh, excuse me. Next is the American Alpha versus the Spirit Squad in a Survivor Series qualifying match. Jordan and his biracial brother, or Gable and his biracial brother, I don't recall, won the match in very short order with the grand amplitude. So far, the other members of Team SmackDown's tag match are Heath Slater and Rhino and the Hype Bros. Yep.
That's what's up.
Any comments or concerns?
Good for the Spirit Squad. They're still cashing checks a month after they debuted again.
It's so weird.
It's like old-timers month between them and the Headbangers.
Why wouldn't they just put them in a match together? Because they don't want them in the main match. I know. But that would have been fun.
Ben Gay, you'd have to rub on the entire like foursome before you set him out there and wrestle.
Okay. I would like to.
I didn't know you were into that sort of thing.
I mean, you know, they're not too old, you know. They're not so bad. Wrestlers age well. Like, Goldberg's damn near 50. Like, that's the kind of 50, you know? Anyway, there's a Miz TV.
Whole jacket smelling like icy hot. I don't know if you want that.
Tiger bomb. Oh no. Okay, so there's a Miz TV with Daniel Bryan. He asks the crowd, "Can he start the show?" Of course, they say no. He shades talking smack, and Daniel Bryan is like, "Well, you know, I could always cancel Miz TV." So this crowd is like, "Yes, yes." So then he says he has an announcement. And it's about some tag team matches. Miz says he doesn't care. And he's like, what about these men's singles team? So Daniel Bryan says that team is Randy Orton, Baron Corbin, Bray Wyatt, Dean Ambrose, and wait for it, WWE Champion AJ Styles. Miz is mad. He's like, was I even considered? Nope. Did you come out here just to embarrass me? Yep. Like, I don't know. There were a series of questions that led to a nope chant in the arena.
It was like they were building an internet meme right there, you know? Like, Daniel Bryan could have just said nope to anything.
And then he stopped and he was like, no, I actually did consider you, but they need superstars who aren't afraid to fight. And apparently last week, Miz proved that he was afraid to fight because he turned down a rematch with Dolph Ziggler. Miz says SmackDown will get obliterated by Raw and says that Bryan is the one who's afraid to fight. So when Bryan is like, oh, and tries to check him, he puts Maurice in between him, much like the man who left his girlfriend in the pool with the crocodile. But, you know, that's fine. And he told him he wasn't good at his job or anything else anymore. And then Miz tells Daniel to go back to moping around John Cena's house on Total Bellas. It's like, all these low blows, it's so rude. So Daniel's mad, tosses the chair aside, so then Miz jumps out of the ring. Bryan calls him a bad wrestler and says, keep hiding behind the announce desk. Then he calls out Dolph, who's defending his title tonight in an open challenge. So Dolph comes out, and the person who comes out to face him is Curt Hawkins. He's doing a promo on the way to the ring. He's talking. He says it'll turn heads, blah, 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 blah. The bell rings, and like 0.7 seconds later, Ziggler hits him with a super kick and gets the win.
Oh, we got to mention the Curt Hawkins facts that he said he has to face the facts, and the facts that came on screen, Curt Hawkins can slam a revolving door, and Curt... And in fact, Curt Hawkins tells the GPS where to go. This sucks, but I like the fact that they're robbing Chuck Norris facts and the Jack Bauer facts for this gimmick, because this is kind of like how Matt Hardy version 1 had all these Matt Hardy facts, you know, so I like that. It's just so many years too late, so it's obviously Vince or somebody back there was like, I like that facts gimmick, let's do that.
It's corny, but it amuses me. I don't know that I would care about him anyway, besides the fact that he's a ginger, so at least this gives me something to look to. Afterwards, Renee interviews Ziggles, and he issues an open challenge to anyone on Raw for the IC title at Survivor Series.
I enjoyed Fashion Cast. I enjoyed Renee's bandana t-shirt, by the way.
I don't be paying no attention to them women because I don't know what y'all are talking about.
I was like, did she just take a red bandana and make a t-shirt out of it?
Oh, they used to do that. Jacqueline used to do that a lot. Why do I remember that?
Probably a couple of bandanas, but yeah.
Yeah, it was like a bandana blouse or something.
Backstage, your girl Dasha, as Dean Ambrose about tonight, she asks about James Ellis, and Dana's like, oh, who?
We'll allow it.
Dean did. He was like, James
Ellsworth?
Now, I thought she was looking at cue cards on the side, but apparently she was just distracted by the man with no chin because he was right off camera. So then Dean emphasizes James Ellsworth, and he's right behind him, and he asks Dean if there's any way he could come to ringside tonight. You can hear the crowd go, no! So yeah. And then Ellsworth is like, please, please, please. Dean says no. There's a Wyatt segment in the back involving Randy. He says he was born with the devil whispering in his ear, and the darkness has shown. That's why he's All Eyes Matter. Then he calls Bray a god, and Orton's eyes light up.
He looked like a Thundercats action figure, and I don't know if anyone on the show is old enough to know about these Thundercats action figures, but their eyes, they had a button in the back that made their eyes light up. And it was like, it was creepy. And like, when his eyes lit up like that, I was like, what the hell? Is he a Thundercat? What the hell is this shit? Did Lionel bust out his sword and call out the Thundercats? Why is his eyes lighting up? This makes no sense.
It's All Lives Matter. That's what it is. So this is the next Survivor Series tag team qualifying match. It is the Usos versus the Headbangers. I don't really feel like I should have to tell you that the Headbangers lost. Yeah. Right.
Shout out to hashtag Dem Usos with the silver and black attack and the blue Smurf berry kicks, by the way, fashion cast. Yeah,
their aesthetics are like popping. Getting rid of that face paint was a good look for them. Backstage, Dasha catches up to AJ and asks him about tonight. And he's like, why can't I just make it to the ring without someone asking me a dumb question? Which is funny because she looks dumb. He said he would win and Ellsworth would end up back in the bargain bin. Elsewhere, Dean leads James Ellsworth out of the building. and he tells him to grab a goober. So the next match is Dean versus AJ, your main event. Things, they happen. Ambrose hits a suicide dive. Somebody, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, a tope suicida is what Mauro called it.
I'm sure you had a very fancy to make as that happened as well.
He did, and I don't recall it.
He's actually toned down on him, though. They're not as prevalent as they were like a month ago.
Told him to.
Yeah, that tope suicida was very Mike Tenay. I was like, whoa, he used Pescado? Oh, shit, okay.
Well, he calls Hurricane Rod as Frankensteiner, so he has a special place in my heart for that.
There you go. He vacillates, so he flips between the two. It's pretty good.
Are they Frankensteiners?
They are.
Oh, well, I'm learning all these new things.
They were Hurricane Rodas before the Frankensteiner, and then they became the Frankensteiner. Actually, I don't know. I could be correct.
It was always a Frankensteiner for me first, and then I figured out, they called that a Hurricane Rada.
It depends on the part of the world you've seen it first.
A Frankensteiner is just a gentrified Hurricane Rada.
There you go. It's a Columbus Hurricane Rada.
Oh, yeah.
It's like if a Jenner did a Hurricane Rada.
Yeah, but I'm still, I've been watching wrestling for so many years, and I'm still like learning the difference between a suicide dive, a plancha, what was the other one? A splash, a pescado.
Like, well, a pescado is a fish.
Yes. So, like, are you, like, diving like a fish
flopping
head? Yeah. A tope suicida.
Maybe we need to go to wrestling school, like, just to learn.
No, my bones things. Can't take that.
Oh. No, just to observe.
The classroom portion, yes.
Yeah, I don't want to take bumps. Uh-uh. I don't want to do all that. I'm good. I'm trying to be like Eva Marie, barely in the ring. Barely. Walk in one side, out the other.
I can't wait for my baby to come back.
I can't wait either, because I'll be able to shade her with precision.
Yeah,
I know y'all been waiting.
Can't be on 205 Live. Maybe like 245 Live.
Oh, man. Ambrose goes for a double underhook superplex for two. AJ applies the calf crusher, but Ambrose gets to the ropes. There's a running forearm. There's some moment with AJ in the barricade. It looked like it hurt. After the break, Ambrose looks like he hurt his knee. He dropkicked AJ out of the ring and hit a flying elbow drop. There was some running forearms, some clotheslines, some superplexes, some things, more things, more calf crushers. But Ambrose got to the ropes. Ellsworth is running from security because he didn't do what he was supposed to do. He came to the ring, and security is now chasing him around the whole arena. He ends up back at ringside. Security catches him. They're about to carry him out, but AJ hits him over the announce table. Styles goes for the phenomenal forearm on Ambrose, but it took way too long. Dean was able to counter into a dirty deeds for the win. Security is dragging away, and Ellsworth has a smile on his face. Ambrose
counts as a distraction finish, right?
Absolutely. If you have to ask, the answer is yes. Ambrose picks him up, then drops him again before security carries him out all the way. And that is how your SmackDown for the week ends.
Yeah, he pounced James Ellsworth clear over the announce table.
He's like a little ragdoll. He's like a little Sasha, like a little ugly Sasha.
Usually they wipe out JBL, but this time they wiped out Mauro.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool spot. James Ellsworth, biggest star in SmackDown right now. So, anything else you want to add?
Who, me? No.
It's just odd that the two hottest like attractions in pro wrestling now are like a list and a guy with no chin.
Exactly.
This is where we are right now.
So we're going to run through NXT, and we're going to run through Lucha Underground and get everybody out of here. So NXT starts with Charlie Caruso giving us a reset of the Dusty Classic. We get Roderick Strong and Austin Aries versus TM61. But Austin Aries comes out. He isn't fit to compete due to his broken orbital bone. He tells that he suffered by getting kicked in the face by none other than Shinsuke Nakamura last week. So he tells TM61 that they should forfeit the match. Regal comes out and proposes that they make it a singles match, but the winner of the match, their team would move on to the next round. So we have Shane Thorne versus Roderick Strong. Shane Thorne rose up, Roderick Strong, after Strong gave a basement drop kick to Miller on the outside of the ring, and TM61 advances to the next round in what was a major upset. I was hoping that Roderick Strong and Austin Aries would win this, actually, because I thought they were a really good team. But like I said, Austin Aries has a broken orbital bone, so he's going to be out for at least a month or two while that heals. His eye looks totally disgusting. His face is jacked up. So we get the top guys, Dash and Dawson. They come out, and they have to forfeit their match versus Ciampa and Gargano due to Scott Dawson having a knee injury. So then we get a Cedric Alexander backstage interview on CN Almas, where he talks about CN Almas showing him the meaning of aggression and ruthlessness, and he thanks him for it. Then we get Gargano and Ciampa backstage. They're doing an interview about winning by forfeit, and they said they aren't shocked by the Revival's actions and that they will meet them up again, and the next time that they do meet them, they will be taking those NXT tag team titles. So we get Rich Homie Swan and No Way Jose versus the Authors of Pain. The Authors of Pain hit the last chapter, which is the Russian leg sweep and clothesline combo, and they move on to the next round in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. We get a Mickie James promo video package on her upcoming match with Asuka at the NXT TakeOver in Toronto. And then last but not least, we have our main event, TJ Perkins and Kota Ibushi versus Sanity. Sanity hits the finisher on Kota Ibushi to advance to the next round of the Dusty Classic. Pretty good match, actually. That's basically the two small guys trying to get the two big guys off their feet, and it was a really good story. Kota Ibushi is amazing. The Golden Triangle Moonsault is fantastic. So you just have to check that out on NXT. It'll be up underneath the What We Are Watching hashtag. So if you guys want to check that out, you can always go do a search for that and find the latest from NXT and also Lucha Underground, which we'll get into right now. Dario gives Castro tonight's title shot after the Dial of Doom lands on Dario's choice. So we get Matanza versus Castro. Matanza gets the win with the Wrath of the Gods Power Slam. Of course, Castro, he got his arm broken by Pentagon, so he had his arm in a cast. They did a really cool spot where like Matanza like breaks the cast off his arm. So he's rather than pain and basically fighting Matanza with one arm. Pretty good match. We get Joey Ryan and Cueto in Cueto's office laughing at the result of the Castro-Matanza match. When Son of Habit comes in to request a match between Master Vita Sagrada and Famous B. Cueto says if Havoc can beat Dr. Wagner Jr., he'll grant them the match, and he'll let Havoc pick the stipulation, and vice versa. Then we get Prince Puma in the ring, where he challenges Mil Murtis next week to a Grave Consequences match. Katrina accepts, then Mil attacks Puma from behind. The two brawl until Puma finally makes Mil retreat. Then we get Dr. Wagner Jr. versus Son of Havoc. Son of Havoc hits the Shooting Star Press and gets the win. Plus, Masaguri Sagrada gets his match against Famous B. Sagrada picks the stipulation. It's going to be a Believer's Backlash match where every weapon is legal and the crowd will be the ones holding the weapons. Then we get our main event, Chavo Guerrero versus Rey Mysterio Jr. in a Loser Leaves Lucha Underground match. Rey has Chavo set up for the 619, but Chavo Sr. hits the ring, and he hits Rey Mysterio with the chair, and they Chavo Sr. hits Chavo with the chair, and they get Rey Mysterio disqualified. Dario comes out and says that they must restart the match, and this time he's making it an anything goes match. Well, basically, it's Rey basically kind of two-on-one against Chavo Jr. and Sr. Well, Rey then hits the 619, then a springboard splash onto Chavo and gets the win, and now Chavo Guerrero must leave Lucha Underground. And that was your Lucha Underground for this week. So, wow. Really good main event. That main event was like 25 minutes. It was really good. I mean, it's kind of like looking at WCW from like 97 again, watching those two go at it for such a long time as they were, two mainstays in WCW Cruiserweight Division. So, yeah,
extreme I was highly entertained. Between those two. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So it was, that was a really fun match. So like I said, if you guys look underneath the What We're Watching hashtag, you will be able to find links to NXT and Lucha Underground to keep up with that. So.
All right, Don, thanks. I got to do some producing here and, let you guys know that I watched TNA tonight.
Oh, congratulations.
I did.
And so this might be your time to take a bathroom break if you're not into TNA. I'm actually going to give you a quick recap of what went down on TNA Impact on Pop. And I'll also ask anyone listening to help us find a hashtag for watching TNA, because there are quite a few of us that still want to watch TNA. So maybe we can come up with a hashtag that makes it catchy. So before it gets canceled, we can actually, you know, get some buzz about it. There are some suggestions out there, like Six Sides Cast, etc. We'll put up a poll. It'll probably be on the WrestleCast site. Help us vote for how we should watch TNA if we are going to watch it at all. But just to recap for you guys, Eddie Edwards is the TNA World Heavyweight Champion right now. He's formerly of the Wolves. Or the American Wolves, if you will, from Ring of Honor. He's now the champ. He's beaten Lashley 2 weeks ago. So the show starts out with a replay of Eddie Edwards capturing the belt from Lashley, Bobby Lashley, and then Lashley attacking the champ a week afterwards. Then we open up with Brandi Rhodes coming down to cut a promo, a boring 10-minute promo. First on Cody, her husband, who they don't mention by his last name because of contractual reasons, but she can be mentioned as Brandi Rhodes, as his wife. Cody was attacked by Lashley during his match with Eddie Edwards the week before, so she cut a promo saying he's going to heal up and be better, and he's coming after Lashley when he gets back. Then Maria comes down to the ring with Sienna in tow, and they have a confrontation with Brandi. Brandi, they both talk some trash, and then Sienna pretty much hits Brandi from behind and stomps her out, and we end that segment. Then we get the first of a few biographical packages, video packages about World Heavyweight Champ Eddie Edwards. Back from commercial, Aaron Rex, he defeats Jesse Godders via pinfall to retain his Impact Grand Championship. Now, the Grand Championship, these matches are 3 3-minute rounds. They can be won by pinfall or submission outright, or they can be won via the rounds if they're scored by judges. Jesse Godders had rounds one and two, but Aaron Rex, also formerly known as Damon Sandow, had a hand rake to the face that affected Godders' vision, then a big right-hand knockout punch that put Godders in La La Land for the pinfall in the third round. Josh Matthews hinted that the taped fingers on Rex's right hand were covering up two large gold rings that he was seen wearing in photos earlier in the day. So the speculation there is he's been cheating the win. Then we get a promo for Team X Gold, which is their X Division trios, you know, basically three-man tags. And this was created by DJ Z, formerly DJ Z Ion, and Billy Corgan, who's no longer with the company. So this is funny. So we get an X-Gold match, which is, it's a trios match. And this is three teams, so 3 times 3 is 9. So this is a 9-man tag, if you will. Rockstar Spud and Decay, which is Crazy Steve and the Monster Abyss, is one team. Then Trevor Lee, Andrew Everett, and Marsh Rocket, which are three guys I've never heard of before, but they seem to be like steps because one's like taller than the other, versus the babyface team of Mandrews, DJ Z, and Braxton Sutter, who call themselves as a team Go For Broke. The referee ejects Crazy Steve and Abyss because they stayed in the ring well past the referee's 5 count, because Abyss decided to chokeslam his own tag partner onto an opponent on the mat. And then Braxton Sutter hits the flatliner to an irate Rockstar Spud for the pinfall. We get the second biographical package of Eddie Edwards, talking about his injury and his return to the Wolves, and his singles career after Davey Richards, his tag partner's injury. This is like the broken Matt Hardy. Broken Matt Hardy and his brother Nero, formerly Jeff Hardy, versus the DCC, which are these guys in business suits with black business suits that wear like Shy Guy from Mario masks and like hoodies on. So they're mystery guys. We don't know who they are. And the DCC is like three guys. So Rebby, Sky is playing piano on stage, and out comes Broken Matt Hardy to proclaim that her playing is absolutely tantalizing. Then out comes Brother Nero, who sings the Obsolete song. The crowd starts chanting, Delete, Obsolete. Then Matt Hardy and Brother Nero come down to the ring and cut an exquisitely tantalizing 5-minute promo on the masked businessmen, referring to the DCC. Then the lights go out, and in typical Wyatt family style, the DCC appear in the ring right behind the Hardys, the three masked members. They beat down the Hardys in the ring, and then they're about to leave because obviously no match has started. Brother Nero and Broken Matt call them back to the ring to fight. And then Broken at referee Earl Hebner comes in and the bell rings to start their official match. Now, during the match, you're wondering where the hell the third masked man went. He's hiding outside the ring. Earl Hebner threw out the match by disqualification since all three masked men of the DCC were involved at one point.
Then the fight hits backstage, and while one of the DCC knocks down Earl Hebner, he puts his foot on his throat in the ring. And that man had a that man's a senior citizen, so goddamn it. Then we cut to a pre-recorded that was my comment at the time. We cut to a pre-recorded, edited backstage brawl between the Hardys and two of the DCC. That spills to the loading dock where Matt Hardy smashes DCC One's, I'm calling him DCC One because there's two of them, head into a plastic trash can repeatedly while yelling "delete, delete, delete." And then Brother Nero and DCC Number Two, their fight spills into a backstage interview with Grotto. Grotto stops his interview and asks Brother Nero to take a selfie. So Brother Jeff Hardy pulls up next to Grotto, takes a selfie, and then goes back to fighting DCC Number Two. Then Brother Nero's hit in the nuts and yells "not again," which is a callback, I guess, to when Broken Matt Hardy hit him in the nuts during the final deletion,
right?
Or one of those the Great War, one of those huge like epic events that they've had. Broken Matt says, "Brother Nero, you need a refresher," and uses a plastic bin that has water from the Lake of Reincarnation to transform his Brother Nero into heel 2011 champion Jeff Hardy, who has the purple butterfly belt from that era. He takes DCC 2 down with his ugly butterfly Divas title and then puts a cigarette out in his eye. Broken Matt then hops into a forklift in the passenger side and commands the forklift operator to forklift that masked businessman over there, in which case the forklift operator grabs DCC 1 by the forklift and like raises him up. Meanwhile, Brother Nero is then stuffed into an instrument case by DCC 2, and then comes out as Brother Nero again, yelling, "Jeff in the box." Broken Matt beats down DCC 1 on top of the raised forklift, and then tell him, "It's no longer Halloween. Take off your mask." The mask reveals another mask underneath it. Then DCC 1 kicks Broken Matt off the raised forklift. Broken Matt falls backwards onto his head. Brother Nero walks up to him and asks him if he's okay, and Broken Matt replies, "Of course." And then he goes, "Who are you?" And so the plot thickens for the Broken Matt and Brother Nero. Then we get a boring backstage promo with Eli Drake, and EC3 turns into a boring in-ring promo. The only thing out of that promo that I liked was they started calling him Ethan Mid-Carter III, so that might be his new nickname. Meanwhile, Jeremy Borash interviews Bobby Lashley, asked him why he attacked Cody last week. Bobby Lashley goes, "Cody who?" and then cuts a promo on Eddie Edwards for the main event. We get the third bio package on Eddie Edwards, talking about his first loss against Lashley, then the death of his mentor, David Daddy Cat Khalil, and then his climb back to success up the ladder and his rematch with Lashley on October 6th for the surprising win with the Boston Knee Party. And then he says, "Like Kevin Garnett, anything is possible. I am Mr. AIP," which apparently is part of his gimmick. Then we get to the main event of the night, Lashley versus Eddie Edwards for his TNA World Heavyweight Championship in a super fight. Lashley comes out first, then comes out the champ Eddie Edwards, Jerry Borash with their introductions, Lashley with the wrist tie up on Eddie Edwards. Eddie Edwards reverse goes to side headlock, side slam. We get a lot of offense back and forth, some suicide dives, some tope suicidas, some back body drops on the outside. Lashley is in control of most of the match. He gets a lot of offense in. He's doing a lot of rest holds and side headlocks and slamming him and posing. Eddie Edwards does come out and get some offense too. He actually shows some strong moves, tossing Lashley around too, which is interesting because he's like half his size. There's a final round of commercial breaks, and one thing, observation about Ocean Spray, there's a town full of people that just like stomping cranberries, and that's kind of weird. I love cranberry juice like the next guy, but I couldn't like live my life making that shit for people. Because at some point, it's like galoshes and shit, and it's all red. So if you're new to the town and you don't know that they're stomping cranberries, you're like freaked out. Like, what the hell are you guys doing for a living? Bloody shorts. I don't know. So anyway, last back from break, Eddie Edwards hits a Shining Wizard, which is a setup for the Boston Knee Party out of nowhere, but he only gets two out. Lashley powers up, gets a sunset flip. Then they go into – there's actually three suicide dives in this, so I named them different things. One was a pescado, one was a tope suicida, and the other was a suicide plancha. But they all were pretty much the same move, and they happened three times in the match. By the end of the match, Lashley lays out Eddie Edwards with a devastating spear. But the ref took a bump just before, so he goes for the pin count, but it's a refless pin. Referee Brian Hebner's knocked out. So Lashley calls out for a new ref, and a black ref comes out, gives him the two count, but Eddie Edwards kicks out. Lashley's pissed off and punches out the black ref. Then Brian Hebner comes to and then calls for the belt. Apparently he's going to, like,
throughout the match. Then Lashley snatches the belt, and he's going to manhandle the ref. Then Eddie Edwards hits the Boston Knee Party out of nowhere and gets the victory via pinfall 1-2-3, and keeps his title. So Eddie Edwards is still your TNA World Heavyweight Champion for as long as this company is still existing. And that was TNA Impact. I watched it, so you didn't have to.
It's good to hear that Brian Hedman is still collecting checks out here.
Brian and Earl on the same roster collecting checks.
Oh, that's pretty good, man. That's pretty good. Yeah. Like the Hedners have been able to keep the pockets lined.
Yeah. And really, TNA. And honestly, the only reason to watch TNA, and you can watch their segments and their matches online, are Broken Matt Hardy and Brother Nero. They are, like, extremely entertaining. You know, and this one thing with DCC was just the latest. You know, they pretty much just, they're like cartoonish in terms of like how they act, how they speak, and just all the gimmicks that they continue to throw into their angle, which is like just extremely entertaining. But yeah, everything else, you can live or die by with the trios or what they're calling X Gold. I don't know if the TNA, this thing with the rounds is going to be a thing. But yeah, there's a lot going on in TNA, the Impact Grand Championship. There's a lot going on there that could be better if they actually had good leadership. But if Dixie Carter's still in charge, I don't know. She's just like a cockroach, just won't die.
Well, thank you, Classic, for doing that extra bit of work. Not only are you producing the show tonight and also being a guest, but also giving a review, too. So we definitely appreciate your input. And I know the people who watch TNA and get a kick out of that will definitely enjoy your segment. So at this point, we're going to turn it over to shout-outs. So we're going to start with our guest, Mr. David Dennis. David, give us some shout-outs and let the people know where they can find you on Twitter and your writings and things like that.
Shout-out to you guys for being awesome and inviting me on here to talk wrestling for fun, which is great. I love doing that. You can find me on the Twitters at DavidDTSS.
All right. Let them know where they can find some of your writings. You know, a lot of people introduced to you through the Undefeated article, but, you know, let them know where they can find some more of your work.
Yeah, you can catch some of my writings over at Undefeated. You can catch do some music things over at Playboy and wherever words are sold.
All right. So now we're going to turn it over to the chairman, Classic. Your shout-outs tonight, sir.
Thank you. Shout-out to our guest, David. I was excited to hear you coming on because I actually read your stuff in the past. So it's like, wow, we're actually getting a right, you know. And it's funny because running on the podcast network now, it's like I used to meet people directly, like, oh yeah, so cool people, you know. I'm a fan of your stuff. Now people are just introducing me because they have their shows, and I'm like, oh, you got that guy? Awesome. So it's cool to have you on and to chop up wrestling with you. Of course, shout out to the WrestleCast, to the Don, you and Didi continue to make a great show. Shout out to Sam, the regular host. I try to fill it for you. I talked about some boring 20-minute promos, but nothing beats the original. So hope to have you back soon so I won't have to stay up this late anymore. Shout out to Spider Dog and Mrs. Classic who continue to put up with whatever they have to put up. They're pretty much the reason why I still have a gimmick. So love you all, and see you next week.
All right, thank you. And Miss Didi, your shout outs.
Major shout out to DJ Wally Sparks, because I was gone last week because I was in Chattanooga, and he had said, I know about Chattanooga, that's where I'm from. So he emailed me a list of like all these things I could do. I didn't do half of them, but I did go to the Tennessee Stillhouse, and I did have a whole bunch of bourbon. It was amazing. Yeah, it was amazing. And it was funny because I was with you know, my old lady gang, and they're on the older side of life, you know, definitely AARP eligible. But they were hanging with me right up in the Stillhouse. She did give me her old fashioned. And then my mother, she was too good to drink the other. So I got to drink her clear 100 proof liquor. So I had a great time at the Stillhouse. So shout out to
that moonshine.
Yeah, it's not moonshine because it's legal, but that's really the only difference. It's amazing. That's exactly what they told us too. They're like, it's only not that because it's legal. But yeah, them, the Stillhouse, everybody in Chattanooga has these like adorable accents. Shout out to them. Oh, and there's this 24-hour diner. Food was bomb as hell. And then shout out to our guest, of course. Shout out to Mel for being out of the hospital.
Yay, we love you, Mel.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to tweet her PayPal. If look, hospital bills.
Yeah,
so come through. She's pretty much the reason why this network exists. So, you know, no shame. We are asking, you know, people to, you know, think about what she's going to go through on her road back, because, you know, hospital bills, Obamacare is not there for everybody. So we're going to have to do what we can to kind of support and pull around her so that we can keep going, bringing you these free podcasts for $3.99. So appreciate it.
Right. You know, so. Right. Mm-hmm. Get a baby her money. Mm-hmm. Is that it? Oh, shout out to my friends who I went trick or treating with at the bar, Courtney. Yeah, that was lit. Oh, and if you watch Insecure, I don't, but one of my friend's friends was a broken vagina. I just want to tell people that. It was awesome.
What?
That was her Halloween outfit, a broken vagina.
Oh,
wow.
You have to watch Insecure to get it, I guess, but that's the explanation that was told to me.
Yes. Shout out to Freestyle Rap.
Open mic night.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that's it. Those are my shout outs.
All right, thank you, Dee Dee. I'd like to give a shout out, of course, to our guest tonight, David, for coming on. Sam, of course, who's actually taking in some ROH live tonight, so we'll get a report of what he saw at the ROH show. Give a shout out to our Jarobi, to our Tribe Called Quest, Mr. Magnum Prime, Greg, out there hustling, doing his thing. I'd like to give a shout out to I Am Mimi Shells on Twitter as well, Miss Bricks Kitten as well, and everybody who joins us during SmackDown Matters and Rawcast. And I think that's going to be it for me this week. So you guys just continue to listen, share, rate, review, spread the word with all your friends on Twitter, word of mouth, so forth and so on. And for my guest tonight, David, for my SmackDown correspondent, Dee Dee Jornay, for the chairman of the board himself, Classic Materia, I'm Don De Laurentiis, and this has been the WrestleCast. Stay tuned for the party promo.
Whoa. All aboard the booty train. Guys, we had a real rough night last night.
Yeah.
We got disqualified at Hell in a Cell. I forgot to record The Walking Dead, so please no spoilers, guys.
Oh, no.
Please, you guys always want to spoil stuff for me.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Not this time. And most importantly, we suffered the devastating loss of our beloved trombone, Francesca Tu.
Gentlemen, if you will, a moment for Francesca Tu.
R.I.P. in peace. In other news, we have a lot of stuff going on, guys.
We do. It's all about looking to the future, and the future is Survivor Series. The one time where SmackDown Live and Raw go head to head.
Awesome.
And in case y'all haven't heard, your boys, The New Day, just got officially named Tag Team Captains.
El Capitan. So that means when Raw and SmackDown Live compete, it'll be the power of positivity versus, remind me? Don't ask me. I don't watch SmackDown Live. I got D&D on Tuesdays.
Guys, look, we have got to educate ourselves, okay? They got several stout tag teams over there. For example, the SmackDown Live Tag Team Champions. I'm talking about Rhino and Heath Slater.
Oh, so it'll be the power of positivity versus the power of cheese and crackers.
And what about the Hype Bros? Hype Bros? Their entrance music is them saying their name over and over. It's like really annoying. And as far as I'm concerned, they don't get booty.
They stay booty.
Who else they have over there?
Honestly, I don't know, because like Shane and Daniel haven't selected the rest of the participants yet. In addition to the qualifying matches, he has them doing all types of tomfoolery, all types of crazy things. You know, written exams, oral exams, all types of tomfoolery.
So many shenanigans. So you have Breezango,
Charles.
You have the Usos,
Jim.
And the Vaudevillains.
Who?
Oh, the mustache guy. They still owe us a time machine.
They do.
But do you really think
think we're going to have to face one of those new teams from SmackDown Live? Because I heard American Alpha is sick.
Like, nasty.
Foul.
Like, in a good way.
In a great way. Yeah. Yeah. But to the point where I don't have anything bad to say about them.
Me either. Really?
But when Raw and SmackDown Live compete, it doesn't matter who it is, because our team shines.